Hello and welcome to RFN episode 437, brought to you by Pixels, the new movie coming out this week. We're not going to shit all over it for the next hour and a half. So, with me today, Mr. John Lindemann.
With Johnny not here, I am doing this podcast in protest.
I did not mention that Johnny was not here yet. Thank you for spoiling my thunder.
That's what I do.
I just want to warn everybody so they can just stop it now.
Maybe Johnny just needed some time and he wanted to sit in another chair. I just want people to be able to stop
this podcast right now and just move right to next week's podcast.
I'm glad that we were worried about this being off the rails and John has immediately taken it there.
That's good.
Yep. Sorry. All right, I'm back. All right. Also this week, Guillaume Vayette returned from his spirit quest. How are you, sir?
Hi, it was pretty good. I went on vacation in the east of Quebec, did some camping, also went hunting the greatest game.
John Lennon?
Man. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
I went hunting for hobos. I've never felt more alive.
Well, this guy, I mean, I'm not sure what's darker, us taking money from Pixels or Guillaume killing hobos. as John has unfortunately let out of his trap already, the doctor's not here this week. But instead, we're joined by our dear friend, Mr. Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, everyone. Yeah, I kind of, but I don't know.
It's fine.
Maybe I'll be muted earlier on, but I kind of spoiled myself.
It's fine. We'll leave it in. I'm not in the mood for complex editing this week. So, we got a great show for you this week. I can't remember if I'm obligated to say that or if Johnny stopped saying it, but we have one. I promise.
It's like Pete Rose betting on his own team.
That's right.
What about the nights when he didn't bet on his own team?
That's right. I have a great... First off, we don't talk about St. Pete here. Secondly...
Oh, you're a Reds fan, I forgot.
Secondly, I'm trying the power of positive thinking. We're going to have a great show. If I say that enough, it won't happen. But we're going to try anyway.
It's the podcast, people.
It's... This is why Jan has never hosted the show but one time. At least I remembered the show number. All right. So first up this week, we've got new business. Please, Greg, save us from this disaster.
Okay. So if anyone listening has got a really good memory of episodes, the last time I was actually on a real numbered episode and all that was shortly after Yoshi's New Island came out. I want to put a disclaimer. It is not the case that when a new Yoshi game comes out, I call these guys.
Like him. Greg is a Yoshanthrope.
Someone's got to sod off. I make room. I've got the hot Yoshi scoop, y'all. You've got to get me back on. That didn't happen. It's a total coincidence. Reinforce.
Unless we've set you up and you don't realize it.
Yeah, well, there is that. It's been weeks anyway. We've had it for ages. Just because you haven't had Yoshi's Woolly World, or won't have Yoshi's Woolly World for months, like it's a totally old hat. I've moved on. I've got something else to talk
you
about.
You broke up with Yoshi's Woolly World,
at least to start with, and that is Rhythm Tengoku the Best Plus.
Speaking of games, we won't have forever.
Well, yeah, this one is kind of interesting. I'm a little hesitant, like, how I should kind of say what might be a spoiler. I mean, considering it's not announced, is it a spoiler to talk about it existing?
No. I mean, so, at a high level, why is this game called Rhythm Tengoku the Best Plus?
Well, in Japan, as I've observed over the years when I've been importing games, where they have, like, the best as sort of a suffix to a title, it's, like, essentially, like, greatest hits. You know, so say for instance, if you have a budget line of like GBA games that Konami did, there's the re-release of Aria of Sorrow that's slightly cheaper. It's Konami the best. You know, so in a music contest, it makes perfect sense because this is kind of a greatest hits of Rhythm Tengoku, the whole series so far. But the plus part is there are new games as well. It's kind of the way the game generally proceeds is that you get sets of four games, three of which are one each from the previous three games in the series. The first being the 2006 Game Boy Advance game, which did not get localized. Then Rhythm Tengoku Gold, that was localized in Europe and America for the DS, and then Everyone's Rhythm Heaven or whatever it's called on Wii. And then you get a new game as the last one in the set. But I mean, I guess one of the biggest differences, kind of compared to the previous Rhythm Heaven games, is that you've got this kind of story mode that's kind of been set up, like a framework to it. It's obviously, unlike Seren, who kind of teased this game when she was on the show, before James's ostensibly brief new business covered three of the most beloved Nintendo games ever made.
Yes.
Kind of put the kibosh on it, but yeah, I don't read a lick of Japanese. So the story stuff is doesn't mean anything to me. It may not mean anything to anyone. As far as I could tell, it is about a small bear with a pink afro falling from the sky, endeavouring to get back up there, and with the help of people like a guy with his face encased in a donut.
You had me a pink afro.
John, I didn't realize you had sold your license for this game.
Perhaps it's like really funny or something, but whatever it is, I'm pretty sure it's superfluous. The actual gameplay of the games is much the same as before. Of course, it is all button-based, unlike the last portable Rhythm Heaven, which used the touchscreen. Although I think there is an option to use some kind of touchscreen control. From I've heard this supposedly, so reading about it on forums and stuff. But again, as I am not going to go poking around settings I don't even understand, I've not been able to put that to the test. It's cool to see all these different kind of strands of Rhythm Heaven come together and get unified like this. If you're a really big fan of the series like me, I imported the first game back in 2006. I waited for the localized version of the DS game and then imported the Wii game again. And I think definitely I like having it in Japanese more. It's just such a ridiculously Japanese game. You may as well. And obviously, importing it, you get it sooner. We don't know for sure it'll be coming out. I mean, you might think so, but there's some additional games that would need localizing with this. Because the last two titles in the series have had their games localized, but the previous one did not. So there's like a more heavy lifting, but I don't know whether that'll keep it out anywhere or how well it sold or whatever. But seeing all these games that you remember coming together, especially in the remixes where it draws on all of them, so you've got games sort of, especially with music, the memory of it kind of really ties into the time that I've really just played these games really solidly. It connects you to that kind of feeling of the time, so stuff from 2006, 2009, 2011 just mashing together in these crazy remix scenarios is really fun, if you're kind of fond and attached to the series the way I am. But I mean, in terms of the amount of new content, like I said, making up kind of a quarter of the game in terms of how many sort of games there are that are new. But in terms of like relative to previous games, because as you might expect, because it's incorporating all this content from past titles, it's got more games than ever before that make it up in total. So overall, you probably get something maybe a little around half as many new games as you got in like the Wii game or in the DS game, for instance. So you still get a substantial amount of new content, but then it's just kind of padded and embellished by some of the old stuff as well. And I mean, at first, the returning games have some new music that they didn't have before, and then later on they kind of go back to the actual music that accompanied them originally. And also the graphics and everything, and the sound quality's been polished up, and I just the presentation's definitely the best it's ever been. And the stereoscopic effect definitely has an additional role to play in the classical Rhythm Tengoku sort of technique of screwing with your brain, with some of the old games that weren't designed with it in mind. Some baseballs flying out of the screen, clouds coming around, that kind of dazzling, putting you off from just maintaining the rhythm thing is totally there with this, even though maybe it's not as immersive as it is when you were playing it on console. It's still pretty good. But I guess the biggest change to talk about, other than that story stuff, which isn't terribly important as far as I could, so it just meant pressing A to skip through some dialogue that I couldn't understand, is the fact that they have made the scoring in the game, the grading, more explicit now.
Oh, this is, at last.
This, this is something that's been a complaint about those games, is that it's kind of a bit opaque of like, okay, so I didn't pass that song, or you maybe if you're trying to get like a superb medal or something, you just missed out, like, you know, what was I really doing wrong, you know, because it's not like most rhythm games, you have very explicit indicators, you know, note chart, whatever, all that kind of stuff, so you know exactly what's going on. It's a Rhythm Tengoku series has always taken a very organic approach to everything. It doesn't, you know, it kind of wants to seem like it's just a mini game rather than actually really all about the music. I mean, it's kind of that sort of weird tension that the series has between, you know, how important are the visuals really, kind of thing.
Hmm.
But here, what they do is you're not playing in book style, as was the case on the DS.
Right.
But instead, you've got the lower screen is just sort of a blank space. And every time there's a beat that you're supposed to be hitting, you will see what you actually hit. It sort of, it shows up as like just a little sort of firework on that screen. And if you're getting it absolutely perfect, it's a colourful rainbow firework right in the middle of the screen. If you're getting it just a little early or a little late, it's going to be a bit left or right and a smaller yellow one. And then if you are right on the fringes of it registering, it's going to start going red right at the perimeter of the screen. So you've got a really good sense of like, okay, obviously, like, these are things that will oftentimes be conveyed in the graphics of the game. You know, for instance, with like, if a classic example would be when you're hitting baseballs, right? You know, if the baseballs are going low, you know, or the baseballs are going high, that tells you something about the timing that you're doing. But sometimes it's not as obvious with that in terms of, you know, am I, you know, all right, maybe I'm just about scraping it here. But what you could see with this, and it, in a way that doesn't really interfere with the graphics of the game in general, because it's all just on that lower screen, is, yeah, okay, I'm hitting this most of the time, but I'm actually hitting it entirely early every time. So I haven't quite got it right. I haven't quite understood, you know, when I'm supposed to be pressing the button. And it helps you kind of adjust in that way. So I like that. And then what that feeds into then is the final score. You get a numerical score based on how well you did. So even if you quote unquote kind of perfect the song, you know, you get, do a challenge like a perfect challenge that would means you didn't miss a beat at all, it isn't necessarily a maximum score, because it might just be, well, you know, you got close enough to the beat for it to count, but you didn't actually nail it 100%. So, you know, that part of it, I think, is just more feedback, really. You know, for people that, it's not a huge deal for me, because I've played all these games to death. I know what's up with them, you know, so I'm prepared for it. But I think it does make it more accessible, because it's more transparent, more feedback. So it's like, okay, you know, next time I kind of know that, because it's like, if you're always hitting it early and you're mostly getting away with it, but then, you know, you hit it a bit earlier than your sort of midpoint, well, then you're missing it altogether. So what you really need to do is concentrate on fixing your midpoint, so that when you hit it a little bit early, it still counts, you know, stuff like that. So I think that's a good improvement, and I think a better use of the two screen design of the console than doing it in book mode and tapping along to it. I personally didn't have a huge problem with the touch controls or anything in the DS game, but I prefer buttons, how discreet it is, how definite it is, the precision. I'm much more comfortable, and I just always find it a lot easier playing a Rhythm Tengoku game with buttons, so I'm really happy that you've got that option here. And so, yeah, I mean, the only thing I could really say about it kind of negatively is that I do wish, having given this canvas of the whole entire series of sort of mini games so far, they make plenty of good choices, I think, with ones that come back, and maybe a few curious ones, but, you know, I think most of them make sense, some of the best stuff from the previous games. But I kind of wish they'd done more remixes that brought all of them together, because it's just like, well, that's what's one of the coolest things about it, is like all the years of Rhythm Heaven games coming together. And they, I mean, there's still as many remixes in this game, you know, as there is in the DS game, for instance. It's not like they're skimping on them, but they kind of take a while to show up. You know, you kind of play through these simpler stages before they start introducing the remixes, which, again, I mean, maybe that makes it a bit more accessible for new players that may have touched a Rhythm Heaven game before. But, you know, for us vets, I think more remixes would have been really cool. But I can't fault the ones that are there, because they're really good, really, really fun. They all have like very particular themes, like that tie in some of these weird characters in the story, such as donuts. By the way, that's a theme for a remix. that's really good. And actually, I should say the new games themselves, being that they've got about half as many as they normally would have, are really good. They don't have any of these ones that are kind of like, well, yeah, they were kind of reaching a little bit here for an idea. They're all really cool, and I think visually have a bit of extra verve, a bit more style than you've seen in the series before. I mean, there's some real corkers in it. The sumo one is fantastic. I don't know how it hasn't happened before. This is like the most Japanese game ever. So, I mean, you've had ninjas and karate men and samurai in it from the start, but no real sumo action until now. But it's glorious.
Oh.
Absolutely glorious.
I'm particularly here kind of surprised to hear that it's even more presentationally put together than even the Wii game, which I thought was
I think the Wii game, it's more in line with the Wii game. You know, it's right. Maybe like, I think first of all, you've got the stereoscopic effect, which for me, I think adds to it. But the other part is just like artistically, they just do a little more stuff like that, makes like some things that look really hand drawn and stuff like this. This one is quite late, so this could be considered a spoiler. But there is a one mini game which involves a tearful teddy bear clutching two bags of sweets. Like one is a bag full of donuts, another is a bag full of cake slices. And he is comforting himself by squeezing the bags, propelling the sweets into the air, at which point he will rhythmically snag them out of the air with his mouth. It is comfort eating the rhythm game. Oh. And he's got this great, like, hand-drawn look to him, the bear, just, you know, like, just stepping a little bit outside that kind of established Rhythm Heaven aesthetic, if you know what I mean. Yeah, mm-hmm. The systems are varied, but they've had, you know, quite an established style of what the characters will look like and all that, and some of these new games just venture a little bit outside of that, and I think they look really cool. So that's all. The new stuff is great, and then the one other new thing, the last new thing I want to mention before we wrap this up, is that there is now a challenge mode that's quite sort of substantial, that you can use to gain things to unlock further mini games that are just purchasable, that aren't really part of the story mode or anything, but games ripped straight out of previous titles that are unlockable through getting perfects and doing these challenges. The challenges are interesting because what they will do is actually sort of change the requirements that you are doing and change the tempo of the song. So you could just play a ridiculously fast version of the song, and it'll say, okay, and you've got to get above a 75 score to pass it. Then you go on to the next challenge in the train, you might have three of these, you might have seven of these, but in whatever case, you can only screw up twice or you fail. So, you know, these challenges kind of test you in little different ways, because first of all, like, there's like I said, getting a certain score, but you might also be, okay, we'll give you a three hearts. And every time you totally miss a beat, that's a heart gone. So it's like a slightly more forgiving, perfect challenge. And then weirdest of all, right, go back to the idea that, you know, there's this whole thing of like nailing the beat absolutely perfectly. You have one where you're playing a challenge, whatever mini game it might be based on. And over time, that mini game will shrink on the screen. Is gradually shrinking.
They pulled that trick in NES Remix.
Right, yeah, it's shrinking, and then every time you absolutely nail a beat perfectly, it pops back up again, you know, it blows back up, gets bigger. And so basically you have to nail perfectly timed beats a sufficient number of time to stop the game shrinking down into nothing, at which point it is devoured by some giant aquatic Lovecraft monster. It's just so bizarre. I can only describe it as just being deranged. I mean, when you get the thing is distracting enough as it is, but then when it's getting increasingly small, the feeling of dread waiting for that sound of as it eats it, it's just like, I can't take it, the tension's killing me. It's great stuff. And when you play the sumo game sped up substantially. It's just like, ah, just the madness of it. It's astounding. I mean, if you like Rhythm Heaven, this is a feast. And I think the fact that it's been the longest gap without a Rhythm Heaven game, for me, you know, since I imported the Wii one, it's been 4 years since I imported the Wii one. I think the fact that it's kind of going over some of the same stuff from previous games is more forgivable. I'm just really happy to have one, and it's this great buffet of Rhythm Heaven. It's wonderful. I certainly do hope it gets localized sometime.
I'm now increasingly anxious about this game. Now, I hear you talk about how good it is. So I did do some digging while you were talking, and apparently to get to the all the games have a touch control option that like the DS controls that you access from the cafe once you unlock it. I guess there's a button at the bottom of the screen in said cafe that flips the touch controls.
There's plenty of stuff in the cafe that I haven't dabbled with too much because, again, just I've had plenty to get on with anyway.
But it sounds like you get to play every game with a different set of controls. So when you
I think that's good for people that like that in the other way, because a lot of people naturally would have been introduced to the series through the DS game because that was the first one that came out here, unlike me, who was introduced to it on GBA. So I'm glad they've actually bothered to put in the option, but it is very, you know, it is the button controls are the default, and I certainly like them a lot.
Cool. All right, so next up, who did I have queued up for next?
John,
you've got a game that you want to talk about, because
as a matter of fact, right? I do, James.
Is it free right now?
Yeah, it's free on PS Plus.
PS Plus, yes.
Probably until the 3rd of August or cool. so.
Yeah, until the next refresh point. So this is Rocket League, which actually some people at work were talking about it, and I don't really follow stuff on PS Plus very closely because a lot of the times it's just, you know, a lot of the stuff on there is just kind of stuff I'm not interested in or sort of random games that are varying in quality. But yeah, so some people at work were raving about it. Rocket League. I'm like, what the hell's Rocket League? They said, oh, you got to play it. It's like this kind of like vehicle, you know, kind of like soccer game. And you know, it's, and I was like, okay, right, whatever. All right. Well, and they're like, oh, it's free on PS Plus. So I'm like, okay, all right, I'll download it. If it's free, what have I got to lose? So I download it. Turns out, it's an amazing game. So good. Reminds me actually a lot of Splatoon in the way that it's very simple to play, and what you do, like the kind of core game mechanic, is very, very fun. So whether or not you win or lose is sort of like, you know, whatever. But the way the game works is it is soccer, except so you're in an arena with, you know, a goal at one end, goal at the other end, you know, blue team versus red team, what have you. But you're in these little kind of like remote controlled cars, so they're kind of like that sort of size, right? So the little cars, and they have rocket boosts, and you're effectively trying to score with a giant beach ball, and it behaves like a beach ball. So you hit it with your car, and that thing bounces way up in the air, you know. And the thing is, the arenas are enclosed on top, and you can drive up the walls. You can't drive all the way up 360, but you can drive up the walls and then come back down. So there's a lot of ways that you can kind of attack the ball, and there's several different modes. The one I play the most is 4v4 chaos mode, and I think there's like, you know, there's 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, and 4-on-4. 4-on-4 is awesome. I haven't even bothered playing any other modes. There's also a season mode, which is the single player, so you kind of play through a league. I don't even really know how that works, just because 4-on-4 is so much fun. So what you're trying to do is, of course, you know, score on the other team's goal, but there's several ways that you can kind of go about it. So the nuance is how you can control your vehicle, because of course you have the normal driving controls, you know, forward, backwards, but things get interesting because you can jump, and you can actually jump twice in the air. So as you're driving, and actually you can jump even while you're sitting there, like standing in place, which is interesting too, because it means that you can make plays on the ball without actually moving. You can get under the ball and then jump up into it and do stuff like that. So you can jump, and you can also boost. So you can do stuff like jump, because you can jump. Once you jump into the air, you can tap the jump button again, and you'll jump even higher. So what you can do is you can jump twice, and then if you hit the boost, which is acquired by hitting little boost pads, you have like a, you know, you can get your boost up to, yeah, you have a boost meter, you can get up to 100%. And So you can and you can actually fly around for a limited amount of time. So you can just imagine like all the kinds of crazy goals. I mean, there's all kinds of goals online where you just see people do stuff and, you know, play a certain angle on the ball, or, you know, hit the ball off the side of the arena and set them up for a perfect goal. And you know, while you're in midair, you can also change the pitch of your car. You can go side to side, and then you can also like flip end over end. So a lot of times what you'll do is, you know, instead of just hitting the ball with the nose of your vehicle, you can kind of pitch your vehicle forward. So you hit, you know, with as much, you know, surface area of your vehicle as you possibly can. So
I need to know this, John. Is it possible to do a bicycle kick with your car?
Yes, you can.
I was going to ask, like, can you do car foo like in the Speed Racer movie?
You sort of can. I think there's an achievement for a bicycle goal. You can actually do that.
We wanted to know.
Yeah, you do. Because I was wondering the same thing, and I was like, and that's one of the achievements, I think. So you can like flip end over end and then hit the ball while it's in midair and score. So nice. Yeah, you can do it. It's really, really fun. I mean, it's much better than I ever imagined it would be. The matches are relatively short. So, I mean, even if you get blown out, which happens occasionally, you know, you'll meet a team that's just a bunch of guys that are really good. But it's more about how you control the ball. It's more about kind of how you play the ball into the corners, because there's only really a few ways to score. You know, you can get the ball down into the corner and then have somebody knock it across and then have somebody else go in and hit it into the goal.
Yeah.
Or you can sort of stand back a little bit and then angle it off of the sides so that it goes into the center.
This is kind of the classical problem with this kind of game.
Yep.
You know, whether it's like Mario Strikers type of deal, or, you know, maybe if you go back a bit, maybe a Speedball type of thing or whatever. You know,
yep.
I really like these sort of fast and reduced form kind of takes on a soccer or hockey and stuff like that, but they can be pretty cheesable, or they certainly were.
Yeah.
You know, and I that's what I always worry about. I mean, Mario Strikers could be on Wii could be tremendous fun online.
Mm-hmm.
Until you ran into the people that were just ruthlessly exploiting the sort of the best tactics.
Oh, yeah.
To score.
Yeah.
At which point it was just a sort of soul-destroying procession. Hmm. So I guess, I mean, with that sort of thing, the proof's in the pudding over time, how well it's going to hold up in terms of, are people going to find exploits, are they going to patch them out, all that kind of, I mean, it's like,
yeah,
very different from the old days in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any exploits or anything obvious like that, but it's funny that you bring that up in terms of, like, you know, only having a certain number of ways to score. And what the other game this reminds me of, so this game reminds me of Splatoon in the way that the core mechanics are simple, but they're so fun that it's almost just playing the game is almost more important than whether you win or lose. Like, that's just kind of like, you know, because you do get experience points and you can rank up your cars. You have several different types of cars and you can, but as far as I've seen, that stuff is, it just opens up cosmetic stuff for your cars, new paint jobs and, you know, little doodads that you can put on top of your
right.
car and stuff like that.
It doesn't give you more new abilities or improve your abilities.
No. But the other games that it reminds me of is the old NHL games, which of course I love. And the reason why it reminds me of those games is because there's only a few ways to score, and everybody knows that. So the game actually becomes boiled down to, can you stop people from scoring those two or three ways? And it's kind of like, so it takes that sort of concept and it's how you react to that. So it's kind of like a mini chess game. Like, I know he's going to go over there and I know where he's trying to put the ball. So can I stop him? Or can he outsmart me? So it kind of like, I like that. And it's really, really good for that kind of like, just kind of quick hit gameplay where it's like, ah, you beat me that time. Okay, start over. And it's just,
now, when it balances out, that kind of stuff is right up my street.
I really
like that kind of the sports game. You know, that just fast and fluid and not necessarily all that deep.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's the kind of thing that's not been like that well travelled. I feel like recently, obviously, I'm not the most plugged into all the different platforms.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact that this is catching on the way that it is on PlayStation 4, even though obviously there's a lot to do with being a no extra cost game,
yeah,
thanks to Plus, but I think it speaks to the fact that there's been a bit of an unserved demand for this sort of thing.
Yeah, because
right.
I mean,
and like, speaking of platforms, just quickly, Seren, our friend Seren on Twitter, informed me that if you buy this on Steam, the multiplayer is cross compatible, so you can,
yes,
buy this game on Steam and play against people who have the PlayStation 4 version.
Yeah.
So eventually, I might join in.
Yeah. So once again, interestingly enough, there is no voice chat in this game. much like Splatoon, and nobody cares. What they do is they handle it, even though they do a bit better job than Splatoon in that the D-pad is what is used for all of the kind of Yahoo sort of good shot kind of thing, communication kind of stuff, right? So so they map stuff to all four points of the D-pad, and then so you hit left, and then that brings up a menu that then allows you to hit four more points on the D-pad that bring up a different message. But they're all useful. They're all like good shot, good goal, nice pass, nice save. Like you can also do spectacular saves, which is cool in and of itself. And you get points for different things. You get points obviously for scoring a goal, but you can get points for making a save. You can get points for properly clearing the ball, stuff like that. My first game was classic because it was actually my first goal was an own goal. I scored on myself. I scored on my team by accident. So I was like, "Sorry, guys." And so then what happened? So the game was pretty tightly contested.
He used to be really glad he didn't have voice chat.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So the game was pretty tight all the way through. And then I was like, I gotta redeem myself. So it was tight all the way down to the wire. And I think I scored to tie the game up with 13 seconds left to send it into overtime, and then we won in overtime. So I was like, okay, good. Redeem myself there. But I just had to laugh. It's like, because you're trying, you can do that. That can happen a lot where you're trying really hard to clear the ball. And instead of if you're in your end, sometimes you'll gamble and hit it against the wall next to your goal, trying to get it out. But sometimes then that means that it will go directly to another player on the other team, and you'll score. They'll score easily. But it's just you can make kind of like little snap judgments like that. Like, how am I going to play this? Am I going to do it the risky way, or am I going to do it the safe way? Because it's always this sort of like risk kind of reward thing that you have to, and it's mayhem too. You actually do get some power ups that will let you, like they're bombs. I haven't gotten there yet. I think you probably have to. It goes rookie, semi-pro, and pro, and I think you go to semi-pro after you're at level 10, and then I'm assuming level 20 you go pro, and then you can probably get extra things. But you can blow up other people's cars, but it's not really a huge impediment. It's just kind of it's so chaotic that
it's all irrelevant anyway.
Yeah, and you just get dropped right back into the game. You're not really penalized by it. It just kind of sets you back. It maybe like puts you back into your end, as opposed to like actually really hurting you very much.
It's a tool for escaping pursuers.
Yeah, yeah. Or I've had people though. I've had it when I have a shot perfectly lined up, and someone just comes up behind me and just nukes me, and takes me right out. So someone actually described it as it's soccer, but it's like watching 5-year-olds play it, where everybody's just sitting there just kicking the ball, and no one really knows what they're doing, and everybody's just trying to kick and score.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
that's beautiful. So
yep.
So free right now if you have PS Plus.
Yeah.
So I would guess you were obviously saying you should go get it if you have PS Plus.
You should absolutely get it. It is a stupidly good time.
Excellent.
Nice.
Guillaume, you went to an event.
Yeah. Wow, it's a weird segue because I did not have a stupidly good time.
No, that's a segue. Congratulations.
I guess. So I went to this Nintendo of Canada event where they basically bring the demos that they had at E3 to Montreal, and we get to play them. And they had skipped last year, but this year it came back. I'm very happy about that because flying to LA is expensive, and I don't really want to do it anymore. But yeah, so they brought the Nintendo demos. Unfortunately, they always schedule these things during work days, and like from 3 to 7. So basically, after work, I got like an hour and a half to enter a packed room and play as many demos as I could. And as a result, I didn't really get to form deep impressions for any of them.
So it's a public event?
No, it's a media event, but okay. You can also bring like your immediate family. Like there's often kids over there, and so they were like playing Splatoon and stuff on one of the stations. I'm not sure what that station was demonstrating, except for
Splatoon.
Yeah. So that was not terribly exciting. The only third-party demo that was there was for that Ubisoft Just Dance. So that
was your first stop?
Station, that station was basically deserted except for when the paid people actually went and danced And we got to watch that, and I don't know, some people were like, yeah, that's a good show. But anyway, so what I did play like the just a little bit of Super Mario Maker, just to confirm that indeed it's a game, it's a demo that exists. I did not really try the Nintendo World Championship Challenge levels, and on my station,
Imagine why not, with an hour and a half to get to everything.
Yeah. Let's play this mind-bending stage.
Yeah, so like it was a little bit too intimidating, and it seemed like some stations had more than those stages, but mine only had those like 3-4 stages, so I skipped them. I did check out a mode called 10 Marios, where you have these short challenges, and you have 10 lives to get through them. You can gain new lives through getting through some of the levels, but mostly like you can't really replenish your Marios, and you have to get through 10 stages to save the princess. It was very challenging. The ideas that they had ran from like just like run to the right as fast as you can, make sure to grab the Starman and then plow through the enemies, and make sure to hit the moving end pull thing at the end of a Super Mario World stage. Otherwise, you died. Like, you had 10 seconds to do it. And then the next stage was you had to use thwomps. They're thwomps, right? The things that can...
Yeah, thwomps.
Yeah. So you had to use them to break through certain bricks to get to your goal. So you had to, you know, get close to them or almost under them, then get out of the way, let them create a path for you, and then get to the end. You had the stage that was called Treacherous Doors, and it was kind of a labyrinth. I did not make it to to Peach, unfortunately. And then I tried to create one of my own levels. It seems the tools seem all right, but I had absolutely no time to create anything resembling even a passable Mario stage. So I just had fun like putting invisible question blocks everywhere and just messing around. But I was just. Yeah, I had no time, unfortunately.
It's not the... Again, I mean, that's kind of a problem with it demoing in any setting.
Right,
yeah.
You know, getting a sense for the level creation, but especially in this setting.
Yeah, like,
absolutely.
So, like, at the Best Buy events, I think I mentioned this on the show, they explicitly were not letting you use the level creator, which is insane. That their demo, their singular event focusing on showing off that game forced you to play the levels that cannot be completed, and mostly it was being played by children who just sat there dumbfounded at the stupid shit that thing was trying to make them do.
But the only way you can do it is, you know, maybe do something where you kind of like crowdsource one, where like you have each person just place one thing and maybe then have somebody play through it or something. I don't know, it's tough to demo.
You gin up a quick tutorial showing you like, okay, now place a block here, now play it.
Yeah,
like,
yep,
right. Yeah, so before we move on from Mario Maker, I was at the event with Karen, and maybe some people don't know this still, but this game is single player. So like there was a Wii remote, there was a Wii remote at the kiosk, and Karen picked it up, but then, you know, oh okay, no, it's only me, sorry, go play something else. So that kind of sucks. I'm kind of getting used to Mario games having co-op modes now, and I really enjoy it. And it's a little bit of a bummer that they couldn't include that in the Super Mario Maker.
I agree with that.
Yeah, another game that I played was Star Fox. And unfortunately, again, you know, so little time, I did not manage to get a good feel for the controls. So unfortunately, I never left the initial awkward stage of I don't really know how I'm supposed to fly the R-Wing and aim at the same time using the motion on the gamepad. I did make it through the easiest, the first level in the demo, it was just kind of awkward. I tried pressing Y constantly to reset my reticle, just like you would in Splatoon if you're using the motion controls, and it didn't seem to work. I tried other buttons. I didn't really know what I was doing. There was no one at the kiosk to help me.
Ugh.
Unfortunately, the control scheme did seem to make more sense in all range mode at the end of the kind of the linear corridor shooter segment. So that's encouraging, and it's also encouraging that they also seem to make more sense when you're morphed into the kind of bipedal form where you're on the ground and you're basically like a moving turret.
So now why is that? Because you're kind of aiming the turret as opposed that, or is it because you can kind of slow down a little bit more rather than
You can slow down a little bit more. Like the R-wing is constantly moving forward, right? And when you're in biped mode, you can stay put, and you it's more of a, you can strafe, you know, it makes more sense. Mm-hmm. What else?
How do you think it looked? Because I remember looking at the announcement video through the digital event, and I thought it looked very nice. Admittedly, I wasn't like scrutinizing it with a jeweler's loop or anything.
Right.
But and then afterwards,
we've missed these kinds of classy.
Yes.
There was
wordplay.
There was quite a lot of hubbub about it looks like a GameCube game, all this kind of stuff. I was kind of surprised about some of that, because that sort of got past me in the digital event anyway. So to your eyes, just impressions.
Yeah, I'm not super I don't really decorticate like visual elements all that much. Like I'm not really a visual person, but no, it did seem maybe a little bit bare. Like maybe the textures seemed to be a little bit low res for what they were, and I don't know. Like
models.
Yeah, very simple models. There were some neat touches. Like there were many kind of thin trees being cut down when you shot lasers through them. That was kind of a neat effect. That's
they didn't
the only
explode
thing.
Like they did in the N64 game, did they?
No, they just they split in two. You know, they just it's kind of a neat touch that I noticed. But other than that, it's not the most visually stimulating game.
It seems to hew very closely to the N64 3DS remake.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But I can also imagine that maybe the game will look much better as it gets closer to release.
I think that's plausible. Under the circumstances, this whole thing of the way that development's kind of proceeded, where mm-hmm. they kind of had a concept and then they had to go out and eventually get Platinum to do the heavy lifting and all that. You can imagine that. I think the priority is the 60 frames,
right?
Smooth gameplay and all that kind of stuff, and then they'll probably do some additional passes to make it look prettier.
Maybe they'll just like change something in the lighting or something, and all of a sudden, whoa, okay, it looks much better. I don't know. Let's hope. I do think of all the demos that I played, like as disappointing as it was to not immediately get the controls, I still think it was the most promising game of the show. Probably the one that I think I'm going to be most excited to play gets released, and that I'm going to be most into. But we'll see.
So what else did they have at the event?
I did manage to play Mario & Luigi Paper Jam. And unfortunately, I'm not that into the Mario & Luigi games anymore.
This is also the absolute worst way to show that game.
Yeah, well, I skipped the... there were three demos, right? There was one where you do some side quests, I suppose. You were looking for toads, and it was like it was demoing the field gameplay, right? So I skipped that because I figured that it would be just more tutorials of stuff that I already know. Like, I already know the structure of a Mario & Luigi game. I didn't really need to check that out. So I instead started with the bus fight, and turns out I also know the structure of a bus fight in a Mario & Luigi game. And it was just more of that, you know?
My understanding this game does borrow some stuff from the other Mario RPG series. Did you perceive any of that?
Not in the bus battle, really. Mm-hmm. It really seemed to be closer. You know, in Mario & Luigi, usually in the combat, you have A to make for a Mario action and B for a Luigi action. And so the trick is that often like the battles turn into mini games where you have to time a jump, time a hammer attack. That's basically the gameplay. You're playing with A and B. And then they switch that up on the DS game, Partners in Time. Then you had also the Baby Mario, Baby Luigi in the mix. So you used all four buttons, all four face buttons. And this time, you have Mario, Luigi, and Paper Mario. And really what it felt like was like a three-button Mario and Luigi game. There was not really anything more to it. So that's a little bit disappointing. And I chose a boss battle, so I kind of expected that to happen. But the whole mini-game aspect of it, I find that in these Mario and Luigi games, like they just tend to drag on the combat. They make the combat drag on. And I'm not that much of a fan anymore of them as I was initially when playing the first Mario and Luigi game.
Yeah, so this is like the fourth or fifth, isn't it?
Yeah.
This would be the fifth.
Yeah. So right. I guess that makes sense at this point that, you know, maybe that's what they were trying to go for when they decided to slam these two together. That, okay, maybe we've done enough of these, but I guess maybe the core gameplay will feature more of it.
Right. But, well, maybe I skipped the best part, actually, by skipping the field demo because... Maybe. I think people play usually these games for the dialogue. It's got, you know, notoriously good dialogue. Like, people fell in love with Fawful with the first game, you know, immediately because he was just so ridiculous and the game was so funny. So that's just hard to demo. So, you know,
right.
There's still hope.
Especially on a rush. Anything else?
Triforce Heroes. Again, I've only played enough to confirm that playing... with someone you know and playing with a stranger is kind of tough, you know, and with people with various degrees of experience with Zelda games, like that, it's just at some point you're going to have someone kind of like losing patience or yelling orders. I'm not saying I yelled at anyone, but
I punched a kid.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's tough when you're looking at it and you know it's so obvious to you, like what you need to do, and it's just like, yeah. This is kind of the way things work, always, in every Zelda game.
Try playing it with a four-year-old. That's all I'm going to say.
I will say, it's like, you know, I haven't
played... You go over
and
hit the block, and it changes colors, and the door opens. Fuck!
Yeah. So the totem mechanic, like, it really comes into play a lot, like, in combat and in some of the puzzles. And I do feel that it's got more... it requires way more cooperation than something like... Four Swords, or at least the DSiWare Four Swords, which is the only version that I played. In Four Swords, you had basically, you know, like you could throw each other across chasms and then step on a switch to raise a bridge for the other person to reach you and stuff like that. But that was almost the extent to which you could cooperate, right? And then you had some boulders that you had to be multiple people to pick up and throw, or... stuff like that. So here, really, like, you'll have enemies that have a weak point at certain heights, and you absolutely can't do anything unless you're standing on the shoulders of someone else, or someone is
standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah, basically. Or if you're holding up someone and they're shooting at the boss, so you really can't get anywhere unless you're cooperating. So it's a slightly different. Experience like a different, yeah, it's definitely, I don't know, it looks like Four Swords a lot, it plays like Four Swords a lot, but it's a different dynamic.
Well, especially with the item, how the items are assigned and how they use them in puzzles, it's really much more focused on this being a team that cooperates rather than just complete backstabbing bullshit to get power gems,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Four Swords can get really chaotic. And yeah, like, I don't really have that much more to mention. I did play Mario Tennis, and it's more Mario Tennis.
Yes.
And what kills me is that, like, the event ended, and I was, like, standing, like, 3 feet away from Chibi Robo's Ziplash, and I never managed to touch it, you know? There were other demos like that that I wish I could have played, but no time.
We all have kind regrets, Guillaume. You just gotta move on. Yeah.
Fair enough. Guillaume, I'm glad you at least got to play some of these demos. Even though the situation was less than optimal, I am a little jealous.
Oh, yeah. Just to end on this note, the venue was an art gallery, so I guess now we know where Nintendo of Canada is standing on the Games as Art.
They're standing in the F Art. Here's some Ziplash instead. Don't look at arts, kids.
An art gallery is the only venue appropriate to demonstrate Nintendo games, it seems. So,
to demonstrate Chibi Robo Ziplash.
Absolutely.
Great. All right, so speaking of art galleries, I don't know. I don't have a transition for this one because we're going someplace awful. So a few months ago, I've talked about Sonic Boom on this show because our listeners are monsters, and I was sent a box. In it was Sonic Boom.
Don't blame the listeners.
Don't blame the person that sent me the box.
Yeah, I want to know where you're going with this, James.
So in that box,
I really don't.
For my own safety,
I want to.
There were two other things in the box.
Like a human head. Like, is this like the end of Seven or something?
John, you were on the show when I read
the box, James. What's in the box?
So Shadow the Hedgehog was in the box because. Fuck everything.
Yeah, this is the end of seven.
In between that Sonic garbage sandwich, as the meat, as it were, was Pokemon Channel, which is a GameCube game that you'd be, you know, totally understandable to not remember. This is sort of, I guess, the sequel to the Hey You Pikachu game, which you'd also be totally understandable to not remember, that came out on the N64. So I'm not going to go into that game too much. It was basically Seaman with Pikachu on the N64, so it worked even worse. This game is, I mean, it's a game in air quotes where you watch Pokemon themed TV shows and a Pikachu sits next to you and reacts to the TV.
But when you say Pokemon themed TV shows, do you mean you get to watch the animated Pokemon series?
In one case. So one of the channels is just this highly chopped up special, I guess it was, called Pichu Bros, where there's a theme song, and then the show basically just ends the first episode, and then it's got, you know, it's got Pokemon's narrator, you know, from the series, it's got the characters' voice, you know, their voices, their names being said in the, you know, by the people who do them for the series. I mean, it is an animated episode of some kind of special. It's probably like a lead into a movie or something. But most of it is in-engine rendered video of things like a home shopping network run by a Squirtle, which is just him saying Squirtle over and over
and over.
While the text of what he's actually saying, air quotes, is showing up at the bottom of the screen. And then at the end of it, you get to decide whether or not you want to buy this thing with real money you also earned from the TV. The basic premise of this is that Professor Oak is a complete asshole when he sent this haunted TV to your house, and then a Pokemon breaks in and decides to watch TV with you. That's the game. Other channels include, let's see, what was that? There's a trivia channel where you're not answering questions, you're watching other Pokemon answer trivia questions about Pokemon, and then they say the Pokemon's name, but they're actually saying their name, and yet somehow, sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong about guessing which Pokemon it is. At the end of every episode, you get to guess one Pokemon. The episode goes for like 6 minutes.
So if Pikachu is trying to guess Squirtle, he sits there and says, Pikachu, Pikachu, Pikachu? And they're like, yes, he says Squirtle, correct.
And then the host, which I believe is... God, what was the host of that one? I can't remember. But the host, which is also a Pokemon, says their name, and the text at the bottom says, correct. Or they'll say their name, and the text at the bottom will say a different Pokemon, and the host will say, incorrect. And then they get it wrong. And then I've never seen one of the characters win a trivia contest. They always get right to the edge of winning, and then, oh, we're out of time. So maybe the game hasn't programmed winning in there. I don't know. There is a channel that is the news, which is just Psyduck saying Psyduck over and over and over again.
So apparently there's nuances to the Pokemon.
Oh yeah,
that we don't know.
Yeah, and they have inflection in their voice, and sometimes they'll hold certain syllables.
It's complex.
But most of what Psyduck is talking about is his theory on evolution as provided by his biological breakdown on the spawning of the Execute/Executor Pokemon, which sounds like some real evolutionary bullshit. Not like Pokemon evolution, like actual, you know, genesis of living creatures up to the point where you have a Pokemon that is a bunch of seeds that evolves into a walking palm tree with faces on it. Really not teaching kids proper evolution stuff there, but and then one field report to Meowth, which is actually voiced by the actor who does the Meowth voice, because Meowth actually talks in the series, the only spoken ass words in this game, not for Professor Oak, and he interviews a Pokemon who speaks about I like dirt, it's really cool, and he goes, interesting, very interesting, That concludes my report. I'm like, what the fuck did I just watch?
That sounds like the little endings to F-Zero GX.
It really is. So this all is sort of leading to... I haven't unlocked all the videos yet because I didn't have a save card. And after you watch all the videos from day one, Pikachu blows the shit out of your TV and Professor Oak goes, well, I guess I have to send you a new TV. It's like, no, what? I don't... Why? Why are we doing this? And then you have to actually wait to another calendar day in real life for it to know that, oh, it's time for you to be able to watch new shows again.
Take that, Animal Crossing.
In the interim, you're sent to black and white TV just because. But the one channel I haven't spoken about that I actually got to watch was Snookum, which is the baby form of Jinx, which is a horrifying Pokemon in and of itself, with big, nasty-looking red lips. Exercise channel, Snookum Shakeups, I believe is the name. And then you just watch this Pokemon do like Jane Fonda-style exercises to music while the Pikachu next to you is doing them as well. And this goes on for like 6 minutes. it is unconscionably bad. You can also go outside and talk to Pokemon that are just hanging around outside your house because Pikachu snuck in to watch TV and they're all trying to figure out if you're going to kill him or not. And then they'll give you cards of them if you answer trivia questions also about them. It's fucked weird. But the channels I didn't unlock, the actual games in there, which is the, if you remember this, which you probably, again, you have every reason not to, the Pokemon Mini, which was a handheld that Nintendo released for some goddamn reason, themed only around Pokemon, and had these little cartridges that had like really small, like Tomodachi Pet smile style mini games on them. Obviously, it was not a big commercial hit, but apparently you can play Pokemon mini games in an emulator for the Pokemon Mini system on your GameCube, because I don't know. And then the last channel is a channel where you just watch Mareep, which is a sheep Pokemon, jump over a fence while it counts how many of them there are. That is a thing that Nintendo released on a disc for $50 at some point. So, if you want to experience Pokemon Channel, and I think you should, I recorded myself playing Pokemon Channel. And right now, it is available for you to watch. Not right now when we're talking, but right now when this episode goes live, because it's already been edited. I'm looking at the file on my computer, trying to figure out what the hell I'm going to do with it. But it's basically me...
I have some ideas.
Burn it.
Bainwall fire.
It's basically me just sitting there going, oh, God. Why?
We get towards like infinite regression at that point.
Yeah, I think so. Well,
we're watching you playing this game, which involves you watching a show with Pikachu.
Pikachu watch a show.
If we film one of us watching your video, it will break the space-time continuum.
I'm okay with this. Like, I don't want the world to exist anymore after this game. I'm kind of surprised though that after Hey You Pikachu, which was, I mean, felt like a shameless Seaman ripoff. If you're not aware of that, it was a game where you played as the owner of a tadpole voiced by Leonard Nimoy, made by our friend Yute Saito. So that got real weird. And essentially, you just talked to Pikachu through a microphone that hooked up to the extension port of the N64 controller, and maybe he understood you and he did what you said. Maybe he didn't. He probably didn't. But, like, there was, like, an N64 made that had Pikachu's just face on it, which is really kind of an unsettling thing to look at. But this game is such a non-game that maybe that was too much work. The one thing that I did notice about the game, and I think I observed it in the video, is that the diction in this game is startlingly high, like, just the complexity of it, for a game that is apparently made for people whose motor skills haven't developed yet. Because, I mean, there are words in there where I'm like, who the fuck is the audience for this game? What am I doing? But, thankfully, that's two out of the three things in that box done. And Shadow the Head...
It's just, you're not seeing the Pixar-style charm of, something for the kids, but then the adults are there chuckling along as well for things that went right over the kids'
There's
heads.
A couple moments...
It's a family experience, James. You wouldn't understand.
There's a couple moments where I'm going to fess up to just laughing because it was either just so absurd what was happening or it was so terrible. I think the first time I watched the Exercise Channel, I either screamed or I laughed. I'm not sure which one it was, but it's...
They are quite similar, to be fair, James. I've been edited you for many years.
Well, you know what? I have better audio now. Thank you, Greg.
I'll be able to tell them apart now.
James, you say that Hey You Pikachu is a ripoff of Seaman, but I was listening to a recent-ish Retronauts episode, and the one where they discuss slow life games, I learned that it's kind of a thing in Japan. It predates Seaman, and so yeah, Yu Saito doesn't have the didn't come up with it, although he certainly made one of the most infamous entries in that genre.
It's a weird product. Both of them are weird products, actually. But Pokemon Channel feels infinitely weirder because of its lack of anything ever. So if you want to go buy stuff from a shady looking Squirtle selling stuff on TV, and then have Pokemon who are on the product he is trying to sell as their quote customer testimonial tell you how good it is, it's like, wait a minute, I don't feel like this. Or watch Pokemon be really bad at trivia about other Pokemon. I've got a game for you, and it came out on the GameCube in 2003. Actually, we have one more game to talk about.
We do. It is Yoshi's Woolly World. Obviously, I'm going to talk about it. I don't think there was any real peril there, was there? That was
playing right to type, Greg. Right to type.
I can't believe they used the Mega Sword again. Yeah, but Yoshi's Woolly World is a Yoshi game that's already out here, so. But yeah, Guillaume, did you play this a bit of that event at all? Or
I did.
Acknowledging its existence.
Yeah, no. So I did play it. I didn't talk about it because I knew you were going to talk about it. But I played with Karen. Sorry. Yeah, so I played with Karen.
Yeah, see, that's something I have not got to do. So you can. Oh, okay. I've played the entire game, not play co-op. So there is that.
So very quickly, like, Karen has never really played a Yoshi's Island game, so we chose the easiest difficulty, and that puts little wings on your Yoshi so you can't hover for a long time, and it's much harder to die, and yet playing the demo still made me fear about, you know, keeping my relationship playing this game, because you get in the other person's way so much. Much more so, I think, than in Kirby's Epic Yarn or even one of the Mario games. Because you can, not only you can swallow up and transform the other player into an egg, a ball that you can throw without them, you know, without their consent or, you know, without even doing it on purpose, just because they happen to be there between you and the enemy. But also when you chuck eggs around, you can... That pushes them away. So frequently, I would try to aim at a platform, like to fill it up with yarn, with an egg, and I didn't happen to notice that Karen was in the way or something, and then like, whoops, okay, sorry, I just pushed you over the ledge, and we lost, you know, gems that way and stuff like that. So I'm a little bit. I don't know. I think that we're probably going to stick with the casual mode when we're playing together, and I'm going to try to play it like I would a normal Yoshi game by myself, you know, like, because there is another mode where it's more like classic, right?
Yeah, that's what it's called. It's got this classic mode and mellow mode are the two modes.
Right.
There isn't like a super guide situation, like you could just flick between them at your own discretion. Although, John, you'll appreciate this. If you die quite a few times in a row, it will say, have you heard about mellow mode?
Oh, no.
it's so insulting. And the thing is, it's so smarmy.
Hey, John.
Like, I'm there like, look, dickhead, I'm trying to get something really hard, all right?
And that's the
I'm not just trying to complete the game. I'm trying to get this sunflower that's really hard to find.
John, have you heard about mellow mode, John?
The timing of it, it's like they make it deliberately hard for you and they just say, boy, you really suck, you know? Maybe you should try this little baby
mode.
Maybe
you should put wings on yourself, yeah. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I'll try it sort of... I won't spoil the whole thing considering, you know, you haven't even got it yet. I mean, I don't want to ruin the game before it's come out or anything, but I have completed it 100%, every collectible, everything.
Nice.
I enjoyed it very much. Very, very good. Very pleased with it. I think in some ways it's kind of weird. It depends how you look at this, but it does, from my point of view, highlight the redundancy of Yoshi's New Island more because it is... very much a Yoshi's Island game, even though it doesn't bear the name,
right.
It doesn't have Baby Mario around, so the health system's a little different and all that. It is, you know, so similar. It reprises a lot of elements. It makes some very direct kind of references to that game at times. The way the aiming works is similar, although you do have the gyro option, as you did in Yoshi's New Island, which is, for me, clearly preferable because it's so much quicker.
Yeah.
And also, being that you're using the Wii remote, you don't have to worry about jerking the screen around like when you're doing it on the 3DS.
Yeah, so, absolutely. You know, yeah. And
it's much better in that way.
Yeah, I was playing it with Karen. She had the Wii remote, and that had the motion enabled. But I was using the gamepad, and I was stuck with the press the shoulder button to kind of start the reticle moving around, and then press it again to shoot. And I think the reticle must have been even slower than usual, slower than in other Yoshi's Island games.
It's pretty slow.
Yeah.
I don't know whether, because I really didn't play with that very much, apart from like a few off-screen play kind of moments where I just went looking for a particular thing
right. That
I might, to fill out a level. I didn't dabble with it too much, but it is slow. I mean, it's a little odd because the Wii remote has the gyro option. That's easily my choice to play the game. It makes it a lot quicker. You can move and shoot at the same time anyway, but this just makes it feel more natural. And very smooth. You can pull off shots quickly, and sometimes in levels that have a bit of a quicker pace, or some of the absolute trickiest stuff in the game, that does come in handy.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to snap off something quickly. But it seems like they could have had more alternatives. I mean, for instance, first of all, I mean, the gamepad could have had gyro controls, couldn't it? But it doesn't. That isn't
weird.
An option. That, I mean, yes, it would involve jerking the screen around, I guess, if he was doing it off TV play, but I mean, they did that with the 3DS.
Yeah, so they had no problem there.
Yeah, a little odd in that way. Another option as well could have been, because the Pro controller support with the Classic controller support, you could have had some sort of dual analog. Because, of course, like Yoshi's Story had analog aiming, but there was only one analog stick. So Yoshi would come to a halt when you had to shoot. Whereas, of course, you got two sticks, you could do moving and shooting that way. Or you could, of course, have the pointer, which is what I always imagined back when I was thinking about a Yoshi game on Wii many years ago, that the pointer would be great for shooting eggs. So it's a little weird that they've kind of limited to this, but it does work very well. And certainly, I think as much as I love off TV play, it's a great way to kind of do extra stuff in games. You'd really be doing yourself a disservice not to look at this in its proper resolution on a TV, because it is gorgeous. It is absolutely beautiful game. So beautifully colourful, which there are issues with the colour reproduction on the gamepad screen with reds in particular. You want to see all these levels in their full glory because they're excellent, and they keep sort of finding new little wrinkles in the whole fabric aesthetic to exploit as it keeps going. So, you'll see things like a pyroclastic flow, as interpreted by a red and orange scarf on a conveyor. They keep going all through it, all these different little touches. You get to the ice world, you've got these sort of giant plastic ice cubes and all this kind of stuff. And the thing about it is they've dabbled with the handicraft, kind of hand-drawn, handmade, whatever it might be, in Yoshi games before. But it's never been this consistent before. It's really, like I mentioned this when I talked about Yoshi's New Island last year. It's a bit all over the shop with different ideas and visual styles and stuff. And sometimes it looks nice, others it doesn't. This is utterly consistent and absolutely adorable throughout. And in some ways, it's kind of surprising. Like, I mean, I remember they bring Poochie back. And I remember on Yoshi's Island, I thought Poochie was like an abomination. It's like, is that meant to be a dog? It just looks hideous. It's horrible. it's impervious to lava. It's obviously some sort of demonic creature, you know. Where that now he's in Yarn, he's adorable. It's great. You know, they've kind of, you know, it so directly references a lot of Yoshi's Island, but it manages to make it even cuter, even nicer to look at. Music's really nice, very sort of chilled out. Oftentimes, but it's got range too. You'll get a bit of, you know, sort of rocking out guitars, some spooky stuff, you know, lots of different genres are touched on. But you know, certainly, you know, there's a fair amount of it that's like, yeah, this could have been in Epic Yarn. You know, there's definitely some, but that's no bad thing because the soundtrack of that was fantastic. But in general, you know, I think the thing that sticks out to me about this the most is how focused the level design is. But even compared to other Yoshi's Island games, which it is, you know, cribbing from so clearly. Because whereas, say, for instance, you might have a given concept in Yoshi's Island, like those platforms that rotate clockwise and they float, and you jump on them and it takes you up in one direction, and then if you sort of jump off and jump back on, the arrow's pointing a different way,
right,
it'll take you in another direction. You know, in this case, those platforms are in, I think, one level in the whole game. But the entire level design is leveraged around that particular kind of platform to a large degree, and that's a pattern you'll see repeated about a lot of different level ideas, kinds of platforms, kinds of enemies. You know, there's a lot of different stuff that's okay, this level is built around this one idea, and oftentimes it's not reprised very much or at all again. So in that way, it kind of feels like, you know, a lot of the ideas, a lot of the kind of concepts that are in Yoshi's Island, but filtered more through the kind of ethos that Nintendo has taken with, for instance, the Galaxy games, where it's like, okay, we're going to do an idea, and then, you know, we could have done more with it, maybe, but we're just going to kind of do it as well as we want to in this one level, and then we'll move on. And there's some really good ideas in that. You know, you don't, you know, sometimes you kind of feel like, well, they could have done more with that. I wouldn't have minded seeing more. But it is nice that, you know, all the levels have this kind of very tight, very, you know, carefully constructed feel to them, rather than just kind of like, okay, we want to pad this level a bit now, let's bring back the rolling chomp thing, or let's bring back this just to kind of pad it out. You know, it feels more specific, and they're that way certainly a step above the kind of R-Toon, R-Zest knockoff games. It's you know, that way it's a step above the R2 R-Zest kind of knockoff games, which I don't, you know, I don't hate those games. I enjoyed them. I'm glad that they kind of kept Yoshi alive a little bit, especially, you know, going back to 2006 with Yoshi's Island DS. But like I said, New Island just seems really redundant.
Oh yeah.
Compared to, because this is, you know, very much a similar game, but just better in every way. Really, you know, I mean, some of the things that were good about Yoshi's New Island, it retains. Like I said, the motion controls, the way it handles the transformation levels, where they're kind of just put off on the side as their own little time challenges. I much prefer that to this more obtrusive kind of way that they were in the original Yoshi's Island. You know, some of the helicopter stuff when you kind of miss it and then you snap all the way back and all that. It just, I like it being more discreet the way it is in Yoshi's New Island and here. So, you know, it kind of retains that. And another thing it retains that I did think was a good idea from Yoshi's New Island, and in fact takes further, is the idea that, you know, you don't have to get everything in the level. You don't have to get every collectible to get credit for it. Because in the original Yoshi's Island, you needed to get 100 score on a level for it to really matter, ultimately.
Right.
Yoshi's New Island, they've relaxed that by saying, okay, what you need to do is kind of like, if you get all the flowers on a level, well, then you get a check mark for the flowers. And then you never need to worry about flowers again. But you haven't done everything yet. You've got to come back and you've got to get all the, you know, finish the level with all your health or things like that. Here, it's just that you've got not only the flowers and your health, but you've got the Wonderwalls, which there's 5 of those, and you use them to make a new pattern of Yoshi. You know, they've got all these different patterns, like cow Yoshi and all sorts of silly stuff that also ties into the
Amiibo
Yoshi.
Some of which are truly haunting looking.
But, I mean, the you've got the Wonderwalls, which generally tend to be the easiest to find. Then you've got the Sunflowers, which are a little bit harder. And then you've got the 20 sort of Miiverse beads this time, taking the place of the red coins. But here, if you collect any of those and then finish the level, you've banked it.
Okay.
You've done it. So I think the good thing about it, you could say it's dumbing it down or making it easier and all that, and I mean, there's a lot of things in the game that go to great lengths to try and make it inviting. The mellow mode we've talked about, you get these patches that you can have, which are basically like sort of cheat codes in the game. You know, almost cheat codes type stuff. It's like, okay, I can put the... if you pay for this patch with your beads, it's like, for this level, you'll be impervious to fire. Or something like that, you know, to make it... Which, you know, in certain cases would render the level, like, completely unchallenging. Because it's the fire level, you know. But it's got all these accommodations for, you know, younger players, who are a big part of the audience. But, you know, I think this one isn't just about accommodating younger players. I think getting credit for it means that, you know, I think there's a little bit of a problem some people might feel this kind of game, where it's like, okay, you know, basically, I've got to try and get absolutely everything, like, from the start. And
right.
I think that can be a turn-off, because it's like, well, you know, if I just sort of have a decent run at getting most of the stuff, I don't get credit for that, so that's kind of pointless. So you're kind of left with the polar extremes. You know, you either just run right through the level,
yeah,
which the way they design wouldn't be that interesting, I don't think, mm-hmm. necessarily. Or, you know, it's complete OCD. I've got to go everywhere. I've got to try everything. And the way that some of this stuff is hidden, you know, it would be really, you know, it can be quite painstaking kind of stuff.
Yeah, and absolutely. And like that first time when you miss the one or two things, you still had to collect some really annoying things that were out of the way, that were difficult to get to. And then you have, you know, oh, I'm going to have to do this again. You know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, even with the beads that, like I said, you get credit for those. But more than that, the first time you collect them, you know, for instance, say there's like a bunch of beads up in the corner of a screen, you won't know whether one of those has got a Miiverse stamp in it, right? Mm. But when you collect it and it does have a Miiverse stamp in it, on subsequent playthroughs, you will be able to see that. So basically that's telling you, okay, you've collected that before, you don't have to go up there and get that, you know, if you're still looking for like the last two Miiverse stamps in that level. So all that kind of stuff I think just makes it a bit easier to go for a sort of happy medium on the first time through. Okay, I'm not just gonna run through the level, I'm gonna try and find stuff. But you know, at some point if I'm like, okay, you know, I've done what I can, let's finish this level, go on to the next one, I'll come back later. It makes that more of an inviting option, and that's certainly my preferred way of playing this kind of game. So I think that's a very sound change that they've made.
It sounds really good. So before we stop talking about this game,
we will get a chance again. Yes, but
we may never stop.
No, I just want to know, like, so far Yoshi's Island games have all been very linear in structure. You know, you play the level sequentially, and you mentioned that this game has like each level has its own gimmick, its own hook, and but can you skip levels? Is it kind of like a Mario game where you don't have to unlock all of them, like in a 3D Mario game, where you can get around them on the world map?
No, it is just like Yoshi's Island in the structure. You know, you're going from one to the next without. What you do have is unlockable levels, which are unlocked not by collecting absolutely everything, but by collecting all the sunflowers in the world.
Oh, okay.
They're the ones that, you know, probably like a little harder than the Wonderwalls, but they're not super ridiculously hidden. So you're going to be able to see all the content in the game pretty much without being like having to really scour it for everything like I've done already.
Good.
And those levels are even more focused than the normal ones, and certainly a great deal more fiendish really quite challenging. Kind of makes me feel like, yeah, I wouldn't have minded a few more hard levels in the game, but it's certainly more difficult than Kirby's Epic Yarn. It scratches that itch more, you know, of a traditional platform kind of game in classic mode anyway. And one other thing I want to give it credit for, finally, is that it does away with lives. I've been asking for this for a while.
Wow.
It's like, oh, I've got all these extra lives I've got nothing to do with. Well, yes, you can die, unlike Kirby's Epic Yarn, but there are no lives. You just restart at the last checkpoint, and provided you're not going back to an area that had different music, the music doesn't even stop. It's just dead, and then regenerate, move on, which is far preferable to the, you know, the kind of superfluous game over fanfare and then turn back and all that. You know, just get on with it. You know, I don't know why they finally deigned to do that with this particular game, but I approve.
Nice.
Excellent. That'll do it for the somewhat extended new business segment. After this horrible thing that John and I will be recording in a few days, we'll be back with your listener mail. It's Now Playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. First up this week, we have a review, Xenoblade X by Danny Bivens. Danny's beaten the Japanese version of the Mega RPG and flies back to us, pops out of his scale, and gives us his final verdict. Disclaimer, he only had one of the four data packs installed, so this may invalidate all of his findings. As it would, I mean,
if you don't have all four, you're not getting the true experience of the game.
It's true.
Right?
You're just a partial person.
Mm-hmm.
In a partial scale. Next up, we have a review of Ninja Usagimaru, The Gem Blessings, by Adam Abu Nasir. Making his Now Playing debut, Adam tries his hand at this curious puzzle game published by Arc System Works. Biggest disappointment is that they didn't somehow get to work in the word excerpt into the title. Points were surely docked for this.
So that's how you pronounce that, excerpt.
Yeah, excerpt sign.
All right. Well, we have an interview about 3D Streets of Rage. Neil Ronahan. Neil talks to Sega's Yosuke Okunare and Sam Mullen about their new port of the brawler Streets of Rage 2. There's plenty of interesting tidbits about the process of creating these 3D remakes. And to wrap it all up, Sam wishes for a 3D Super Metroid. yeah, right.
Keep
wishing, buddy. Dreams are good. All right, well, anyways. We also have a preview of Super Mario Maker by Carmine Red. Carmine takes Mario Maker for a spin and gives us his thoughts, discussing how it has some elements that are a throwback to Mario Paint. He also details how the creation tools work and reveals that he has never beaten Super Mario 1, 2, or 3. Man, Super Mario 3 is so easy, too.
It's for babies.
It is. It's so easy. Carmine, I mean, you can beat that in like an hour, especially when you use the whistles.
Yeah, or especially if you're on the 3DS.
Yes, definitely. With that D-pad. That sweet D-pad.
All this and really a lot more. I promise, there is a lot more than this. There's a video of me playing Pokemon Channel, for example. Is available to you right now at NintendoWorldReport.com. And we're back! It's time for listener mail. But first, I wanted to go ahead and do a quick follow-up from last week's episode. We got an email, and I heard some other comments about the fact that we didn't really spend a lot of time discussing the passing of Mr. Tori Iwata last week. We actually responded to one of the emails that we got about it, but I just wanted to quick touch on it again and say, you know, maybe don't read the article. I think we mentioned it there, but because of our publishing schedule, it was going to be a full week later, and we recognized that pretty much the entirety of the internet gaming podcast community will have had a chance to speak about it at that point, and we really wouldn't have much to add to the conversation. So we opted instead to kind of acknowledge it. That would have been really bizarre if we didn't, but we decided to do a fairly reserved handling of the particulars of, you know, his actual passing, because ultimately at that point it wasn't news. And ultimately the only thing that we could really add to the conversation would be to do analysis on the plan going forward, and it didn't feel like A, it was the right moment to do that, or B, that we were equipped to make those kinds of statements and, you know, projections up until the point that Nintendo starts to project themselves what they see as their future plans. If anybody wants to add to that, I think that's kind of where we were at.
The news was kind of out there already. We know who's going to be in charge in the interim. We know all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, really up to that point, it's just speculating on stuff that everybody else has already speculated on.
Yeah, it's kind of a respect thing at that point to not just spend our time navel-gazing, but really it's just to give you know, the passing of a person who is, you know, very important for both that company and that industry the appropriate room to breathe to sort of keep all the speculation stuff and just hold on to that for the time being. So, but what we're not holding on to is email. I want to go ahead and thank people who sent some email in at the last minute after we did our Nintendo World Report present, or Radio Free Nintendo production of the Lords of Thunder round, TMTMTM. We had actually almost run out of emails, and we got some very quick responses, so thanks to those of you who are paying attention to our Twitter game. We were begging for emails.
You see, James, people don't need to know that, though. You should say, oh, once again, we got a deluge of emails from our millions of listeners.
Well, I was going to
on Twitter. Sell things, James.
It's not that covert.
It was either that or it was going to be an unusual amount of email, of a single email where we sit here and talk about Amiibo for 40 minutes. Do you want that, John?
It's marketing, man. You want me to be the marketing guy, James? I'll be the marketing guy, all right? I mean, you know?
So if you want your email here. If you want your email read on this show, but not by John, I promise, if you put it in this subject, I won't let him do it.
Hey, if you want your email read, you better get it in, because we got thousands coming in by the truckload.
It's an email, John. Anyway, it's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com.
Truckloads of packets coming in.
Binders full of emails. There's a 2012
oh my
gag
God,
for you.
That's,
it's like a series of tubes, John.
Yeah,
even older American politics reference. So we'll see if we can get going.
Ted Stevens.
Anything about the 2000 election?
There we go.
Yeah, yep. Your arm goes numb as you say that, Craig. Well done.
All right. Before we continue to hang like Chad anymore, Greg, you're the first one.
Okay, Jake writes, hello, everyone. I wanted to start off by saying that I am a big fan of the podcast and of each of you, so I'll keep it brief.
I love when we have the guest read an email like that.
I have heard you express in the past, both sarcastically and seriously, that you guys generally aren't fans of Amiibo. My question is, what would it take for you to purchase an Amiibo if you don't already own one, or what would it take for you to completely jump on board? Ogre Battle Amiibo, James?
Oh my God. I'll
never completely jump on board. I mean, there are a couple that it's...
That he owns already.
No, I don't have any Amiibo.
Above his headboard.
The ones that are coming out, the Pixel Mario ones are pretty cool. That are being, at least in Europe, they are being packaged in with Mario Maker. Those are pretty cool. The old school one. Those are neat. Still don't know. See, the thing is already, my whole thing is that I already have enough crap that clutters up my apartment. I am loathe to bring in more stuff to clutter up my apartment, and then I have to move all that crap. So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't really hate Amiibos, but I've never seen them be useful enough to justify them taking up yet more space.
I mean, it's our kind of fire that we put on this topic, and John and I, especially during the Now Playing segment, will drop hot fire on this. Is a lot of from the same place as the infamous scarf conversation we had following Hyrule Warriors, where we just went nuclear on that poor scarf because it had reached this high point of absurdity where we couldn't handle it anymore. I would say that if Amiibo stocks weren't this kind of magical leprechaun of plastic crap that you could find on store shelves and you could actually get them, we would have made a lot less jokes over the last few months.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't have been funny. I mean, it became funny because it was so absurd.
Yeah, right. The fact that they were so hard to get and the fact that people were freaking out because they were so hard to get.
And they kept fucking making more of them and they couldn't stock them on
their head. Yeah, and for things that aren't really that useful in the big scheme of things. They're, you know, it's...
Right. Their utility seemed relatively low. I mean, people were buying them as collector's items, ultimately. And that's fine. Yeah. That's a totally legitimate reason to buy them. But it was the mix of the insanity of Nintendo's inability to stock them and then the outrage that happens cyclically every time it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the collector thing, that's what it comes down to. I think that they don't really have a purpose in games all that much. So it's really like it comes down to, are you a collector or are you not? Like, you have that mindset or you don't. And so, like, I don't really have anything against Amiibos. I did buy the Ouija one just because Karen likes the character. I will probably... the missile one, because I didn't know another one was coming. I guess I should have known. And then I kind of regretted my decision, because the Nendoroid Luigi figure is amazing, and I would have paid $40 for that instead. But yeah, like, maybe
don't tell Nintendo this.
No. Well, if they can make a product that's as high quality as that Nendoroid Luigi figurine, then yeah, sure.
What if they put an RFID tag in it and charge $60 for it?
But I might pick up a couple more, like the Chibi Robo one. Like, there are certain Nintendo characters that you will never ever have a toy or a figurine or a product of otherwise. You know, like Chibi Robo. Right. That's basically that's the only Chibi Robo related merchandise that I'm ever gonna see. So might as well get it, right?
No, I like that, because Little Mac is another one. You know what I mean?
Sure.
The Duck Hunt duo, when that comes. Like, whoever thought that was going to happen? Like, that's cool to me, to see them come, you know, get figures and be out there in the public concert, be on store shelves in the space year 2015. I get a kick out of
the year of our Lord 2015, where Duck Hunt is unavailable merchandise.
I've got the Woolly Yoshi one. I got it in a bundle with a game.
What color was it?
Yeah, it's okay. I can understand that.
It's green. This bundle is green. That was the only way I could get one affordably. Like, they got, because the presumed scarcity, like, everyone was gouging for those individually. But with the game, and at a reasonable pre-order price, it was basically the price of an Amiibo. So I was willing to pay that. And it's cute. It's very nice. And pretty damn useless. Like, I guess it can function as a Yoshi Amiibo in general, but it's specifically like the Epic Yarn, the Woolly World functionality is just, it'll save your preferred design of Yoshi, so that if you went round someone else's house and played co-op, you could use that design of Yoshi while playing with them, even if they haven't unlocked it yet or something. You know, it's really trivial.
Right. Once upon a time, they saved that trivial functionality to the Wii Remote memory.
Wii Remote, or N64 memory packs, of course, and go with the controller, all that kind of good stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's just because it's a cute little toy. You know,
I am pleased that they are maintaining, you know, that this Amiibo of Yoshi is a Yoshi Amiibo, such as is Mario Amiibo. Mario series Amiibo, as is his Smash Brothers Amiibo.
Yeah, they do the same stuff, even though they are different products.
So it lets them continue to build functionality for, if you have an Yoshi Amiibo, it continues to gain value as they continue to make an game with an Yoshi.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Yoshi's already been done three times.
That's true.
Ridiculous.
He's getting into Mario territory. The Gold Mario, the Silver Mario, the Super Mario Mario, the Smash Brothers Mario, the 8-bit Mario, the other 8-bit Mario. Stop it.
For me, the best stuff is the obscure stuff. I just get a kick out of that. But one other thing I think they should do, whether I would end up getting it or not, but just in general, is vehicles. You know, an R-Wing, a Landmaster, the Blue Falcon. Yeah. That, you know, I mean, first of all, that would involve a new F-Zero game, so I'm very much for it.
Oh, I see what the plan
is.
Well, in that case, I'm all on board the Ogre Battle Amiibos, yes.
No, I mean, I'll buy
all of them, Nintendo.
You know, I mean, because the Nintendo have trotted out this line about, oh, well, you know, we just can't think of anything new to do with F-Zero, so we can't. If it is literally just, oh, well, it's got Amiibo, that's new enough to justify making it, I am all on board. I will buy a Wild Goose Amiibo day one.
Will you buy the James McCloud as depicted in F-Zero GX? Because he looks like shit.
I believe that. Does he drive the little Wyvern?
I meant his fursona that he's got going around there.
No, again, like, it has to, you know, I mean, I don't think they're doing any specific Star Fox. I mean, it'll just be like Falcon Fox. But if they were, I'd want it to be the vehicles, not the characters. Concentrate on what the game's about.
Well, you remember his F-Zero, where he's just a human.
He's a human guy with the same costume, yeah.
It weird ears. That's it.
No, I don't want anything to do with the actual drivers. I want the vehicles, if anything.
That's the only way we're going to let
Although
you get
some of
your
them
new
have
F-Zero
sort of
game.
Iffy names like Bunny Flash.
I'll take that one, actually. I actually do own an Amiibo. I've spoken about it on the show. I bought a Mega Man Amiibo.
Oh, yeah, Mega Man's another, that's another great
one.
Yeah,
but mostly because I wanted Capcom to know there are people who still actually like this franchise.
Yeah.
It's like two ways to do that, sure. Like a Mega Man helmet that you can buy now, James. You know,
I don't like the franchise that much. Like, like I honestly considered writing our Capcom rep going, look, you assholes, I want one thing out of you. It's a Mega Man game, not a fucking helmet.
I know.
Stop it.
This amiibo will not be a surrogate for the game that I want you to make.
No, this helmet will not be purchased, period. But I realized that my our Capcom rep would probably just write me back going, dude, I know. I feel like they're as long-suffering as we are, so it probably wasn't worth the effort. John, what about you? Is there an amiibo you would buy?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like the kind of 8-bit pixel ones. But, I mean, a lot of this stuff falls into...
No, just a dream amiibo.
A dream amiibo that I would buy?
A dream amiibo.
Bear hugger. You know it makes sense. Well, you know, if they don't want to dip that far, can at least do a sport ball.
It's true. Well, I mean, I would say if they made one of Ray...
Oh,
Disaster Day of Crisis. I would probably buy that.
Oh, John wins. John's drop that. That's the end of that question.
Yeah, I would probably buy one of those. That would be pretty
want
great.
It to be like
the
a special.
If they made one of the bear from Disaster Day of Crisis,
bear,
that would be amazing.
Yes, yeah. Like one
did you just make one of the giant hamburgers?
One of Ray's friend who dies right at the start, like falling into the lava.
Yeah, Steve, I believe is his name.
Steve.
Oh, Steve. My God.
I really think Ray's amiibo is just him holding that hamburger bigger than his head.
Yeah,
that he found in a trash can.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
So yeah, those I might be forced to put in for that.
Jesus. All right, John. Next email.
All right, next email is... Let me just bring it up here. Owen writes, so a lot of people think that the new Zelda title might go cross-gen. Clearly, there is a precedent for this to happen, but I think there is a chance Smash 4 could do this as well. I understand there are a ton of unknown variables at play here due to us knowing very little about the NX, but by the time the NX comes out, there will be presumably a significant amount of DLC characters for Smash, and hopes are that the NX will have improved online functionality, with perhaps Nintendo wanting a title to champion this functionality. My question is, what chance do you see in there being a Smash 4 NX? What sort of a machine the NX would need to be to warrant this, and are there any other major titles which might end up being intergenerational, perhaps the next Pokemon or a Fire Emblem Fates with all three quests included?
Kind of like this one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, technically speaking, this game already is not intergenerational, but interplatform.
Yeah, no, and also it's like an ongoing service almost. I mean, they haven't even delivered all the stuff they promised. There isn't additional characters, the tournament mode and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's still coming for the Wii U version. So it feels much more like a sort of ongoing project than previous Smash Brothers were, where it's just, well, you know, they do it to the best of their ability, they put it out there, and that's that. And I mean, fighting games in general, there's plenty of precedent for them sort of getting a bit of a, you know, spiffing up and then being released as a Game of the Year edition or Ultra version, whatever
right,
it might be.
New challengers and
next platform. Obviously, it's not something Nintendo have done with Smash Brothers before, but I mean, especially if NX kind of fits into this thing, the paradigm that some people have been sort of postulating about, that it might be kind of more of a platform rather than a device, you know, that there might be multiple kind of NX devices and it's just about having one platform for all your Nintendo games in the future. I think it would make sense to kind of start that with a game that has already got this kind of cross-platform heritage, having been on 3DS and Wii U, and that he kind of interacts between the two. The only thing I would also say about it is just that, you know, Sakurai at least wants us to believe that these games are killing him.
Yes.
Like, yeah, making definitely. These games from scratch, you know, his one arm isn't working really right anymore, and mm-hmm. you know, they put so much time and effort and all that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, how long is it going to take? Is it even possible for them to do another, like, entirely kind of
now,
from scratch?
I don't see his hair falling out, so until I see his hair falling, although he could
well,
be
he's still Benjamin Button.
He could be wearing a wig. I won't throw that out.
His hair's
going to
fall in, presumably.
I mean, one way to look at it is, let's say NX comes out in 2016, just for the sake of argument. That's still pretty hot on the heels of Smash Brothers for Wii U and in fairly close to 3DS. I could see them releasing a version of the Wii U one, assuming the Wii it's not, or releasing a version of Smash Brothers, essentially the same game, maybe a remix of the content, maybe it's got some of the 3DS content in there and some of the Wii U content.
Yeah, they just smack it all together, game of the year edition style.
But
it's
probably too close for them to even want to consider making a new Smash Brothers game. But if they make this, you know, this hot remix that jams that they could do, then maybe that's enough to tide over on this. Whatever NX is.
And it also fulfills the criteria that a lot of launch games do, yeah, which is why you have so many of this sort of thing of at launch, of like, okay, we need to populate the launch somehow, we need stuff we could do. I mean,
right.
Like the first year of PS4 and Xbox One was a hell of a lot of this stuff, and even it's still going on now.
Yep.
Where
yep.
it's like, okay, we're going back to a PS3 game and, you know, it's gussying it up a little bit, that kind of stuff. I mean, but this would definitely, you know, Smash Brothers has not been a kind of launch type of game since Melee. And Melee did really well, relatively, for a GameCube game off the back of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this game hasn't... I mean, Smash Brothers Wii U, the Wii version at least, didn't sell what it could have because of the Wii U's...
You know, I mean, it doesn't... Smash Brothers doesn't... hasn't quite got the same kind of reach as Mario Kart, for instance.
So that was one I was going to wonder about, was could they do this with... I feel like they'd want to make a new Mario Kart, because that game would be fairly old by the time.
Yeah, well, Mario Kart's very different. They churn them out a lot more regularly. You know, I mean, Smash Brothers is the one of the Nintendo things that really has remained an event when it comes along, because it is like 6 years in the making, whereas Mario Kart games have been 2 to 3.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if you're talking about that cycle thing, you know, it'll probably be around about time for another Mario Kart game at that point anyway.
Yeah, I mean, right. The thing is, we don't even really know at this point if NX sure. is going to be backwards compatible or not. So you may be able to play these games right out of the box. You don't still
yeah,
know
maybe
that.
Maybe they'll have a download, let you download them. But I this goes back to the what is NX kind of thing. But
yeah.
certainly
yeah.
I could see a game like Fire Emblem getting a best of edition or...
yeah, something that's not competitive.
Or
that's the kicker with Smash. Is that
if,
fact
there
is,
if there is an NX handheld, if it is, or if it is a handheld... or part of it is a handheld.
I think the alternative is that, well, there's the NX handheld and the NX console.
Right, you know, yeah. I mean, it's the same
platform, but you just pick the device.
Right.
You know,
there is a handheld device that is under the NX family of systems, which we'll use Nintendo...
Yeah,
Nintendo,
they've already had that phrase. So you
yeah,
know
they've
what?
Got that one in their pocket. I could totally see them launching a Pokemon game on 3DS and on that, because they need it on the platform that's got a trillion copies. The Pokemon games that came out on 3DS have sold obscene numbers of units. Yeah. But it is, if they make the NX version of that, you know, in some incentive ways better, a way to either convince people to double dip when they finally do upgrade or to go ahead and make the upgrade right now. Has a handheld ever launched the Pokemon game? I don't think so, because Nintendo's too conservative to do that. They want the Pokemon game. Like Game Boy Color, their Pokemon Gold and Silver came out roughly the same time, and they had color support, although it wasn't as full-featured as some other games that had color support a little bit later.
Right.
But this would be an opportunity to both kickstart that, a handheld system, by saying, hey, look, there's a Pokemon game. This is the best version of that Pokemon game.
Well, and I dare say it is worth mentioning that for the first time in quite a few years, we don't have a Pokemon game on the docket for this year. You know, it became annual, didn't it? You know,
yes, or semi at least.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it has been annual, I think, since Pokemon Platinum. Or so. It's been
yeah,
once
pretty much.
A year.
Yep.
You know,
yeah, there's always
and this
been
year
something.
We don't have one. So, I mean, it is interesting to wonder whether perhaps they could be preparing something if the platform were to launch next year, to have a Pokemon ready for it immediately. Again, it would be something that they haven't had before. And I mean, look, they talked about learning the lessons about launch, you know, from after the 3DS launch, and then, you know, the Wii U launch was the way that it was. But there's this best laid plans of mice and men and all that, you know, they might think they have stuff lined up and then it falls through or whatever. But I mean, the one thing I would say is kind of like, I mean, they've already crossed the HD development bridge, right, with Wii U, so, you know, maybe there won't be as many kind of pratfalls for them going forward. But yeah, I think it's possible. Pokemon is a good candidate for that kind of thing.
I think if the Fire Emblem franchise continues to be hot for them, and every indication was, at least with the launch of, as they call it, IF in Japan, it has done pretty well, that's a good candidate. I could even conceivably see an enhanced version of a Splatoon game doing the jump.
That's sort of fast-tracked.
Or if it's a handheld NX, maybe a D-enhanced. Because, I mean, one of the things that drove me crazy when Splatoon came out was outlets going, man, this will be on the 3DS next year. The fluid dynamics make the 3DS completely unviable platform for that game. Just because you have to do so much liquid stuff, and liquid is a pain in the ass to do. Liquid physics. But a new platform may be able to handle the physics of a liquid. At which point, maybe a Splatoon port, or maybe...
No, because has that done very well in Japan. On Wii
especially
U,
especially for a Wii U game.
But that's the key, isn't it? For a Wii U game, they must be looking at that, thinking, "Well, imagine what more we could do if it was on a platform that had sold many, many more million units."
And then look at the platform that sold many, many million more units, and said, "Shit, we can't do it on that one."
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think that sentiment has been expressed. But that, you know, I said if you've got the NX being at least possibly a portable or optionally a portable, then that's another thing they're going to be looking at. But that probably seems to...
The fact that Splatoon is so fresh, like just came out basically, and doesn't even have all of its features implemented yet, like it kind
Much
of
like
makes
Smash.
It an easier candidate to improve. I mean, like,
yeah,
to add stuff
to.
There are some
put...
very kind of obvious ways that you can add to the single player.
You
can probably add co-op in there. There's so much that you can just stack on and make it
maybe a
fuller game.
Especially on an NX portable, like local multiplayer.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, again, in Japan, huge deal. That kind of, you know, the Monster Hunter type of multiplayer is a big deal.
Oh, God, so multiplayer boss battles. There you go.
So, you know, I mean, once they've obviously they've got all this kind of this staggered content release plan that they've had, but yeah, you know, all of that and extra stuff, put a bow on it, you know. I mean, that because I think there is going to be a feeling, you know. And I mean, they did this a bit with it wasn't so much at launch, although you had Twilight Princess, but they did this kind of with the new play control stuff on Wii. Kind of like, we made these great games that we really believe in, and people didn't play them enough. Because that platform was a bit obscure, so let's, you know, hopefully we give it to them again on this new platform that's not going to be so obscure, and people will get to see how wonderful it was.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of very smart business plays they could make here. Especially the one extra wrinkle on Smash is that Nintendo didn't make Smash themselves. Like, they didn't use their internal development resources to make that game. And that's one thing that they need to secure more of, in a way, is have more development resources on hand to make these HD games. And that's part of what doing a single platform would do, would alleviate some of the pressure on their resources to having to
populate. Yeah, I mean, they've been talking about more integration between the two for a while.
But in theory, they could do Smash without touching any of their own resources.
Yeah, I mean, they've been talking about kind of having it so that, you know, that the Nintendo internally doesn't have this situation where, you know, some of their development resources kind of know how to work with one console but not so much the other and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's just that fragmentation, you know, is an issue on the development side. It's obviously an issue on the market side. You know, where, like I say, you've got a game like Splatoon that, you know, yeah, like, Western market gamers would probably prefer to play that on a console in front of the TV. But it could be huge in Japan, as a handheld Monster Hunter type of multiplayer kind of thing. If you integrate the two together, then you can basically, you know, you can have your cake and eat it. You can service both without having to have completely different, you know, versions of the game like you did with Smash Brothers. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, Smash Brothers, they had to make these two totally, you know, different games in a way, and then work really hard to make them the same game. Right. Which is ridiculous, really. I mean, I bought both versions. I got a hell of a lot of use out of them. I love having both versions, but, you know, what the NX should be able to do is transcend that whole issue. And, yeah, it'd be kind of ironic if Smash 4, as Owen refers to it, was the sort of flagship for that game, for that platform, because it kind of demonstrated the problem that existed before.
But then it could be the demonstration of the solution.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great candidate for it.
All right, so, Gee, you're up next?
Sure. Zup writes, how do you feel about Game Freak's recent departure from Nintendo consoles and handhelds with their release of Tembo the Badass Elephant? The game is getting decent reviews and seems aesthetically a fantastic fit for the Wii U, but the game is being released on everything but. I know that Game Freak is independent from Nintendo, while Pokemon is not, so we won't be seeing Pokemon on Xbox or PlayStation anytime soon, like some doomsayers have predicted. But I still don't think that this bodes well for Nintendo. Do you think that the fact that one of their premier second parties is bailing on Nintendo consoles for their new IPs is representative of a falling out between Game Freak and Nintendo? Do you expect other second parties like Intelligent Systems and HAL Labs to start releasing their new IPs on other systems? Is Nintendo doomed? Love you guys, keep up the good work, etc.
So let's talk a little bit about it. So, Intelligent Systems, I want to say, has Nintendo ownership. Or not maybe full ownership, but at least partial. I mean, they used to cohabitate an office with Nintendo. Mm-hmm. So I would say that in that case, the answer is probably no. Also, they haven't done a non-Nintendo system game ever, I think. And in fact, they make hardware for Nintendo development kits. They do a lot of work. You know, they do a lot of work on providing development tools for Nintendo. So I would say their risk is relatively low. How I'm a little bit foggy on, to a certain extent. I'm not sure what, if any, economic entanglements they have with Nintendo. They do have more history of making games outside of Nintendo, but not in a long time. So I don't believe that there is an ownership situation in that case, if that makes sense. It's confusing, to say the least. But in the case of Game Freak, I don't know. I don't know what the ownership situation there actually is.
I mean, this isn't the first time they've made games for other consoles.
No, Game Freak has a history of making games.
Yeah, I mean, just looking here, I mean, they've made a PC Engine game. They've made Mega Drive games.
Oh yeah, they made Sega games because they made one of the games for Retroactive. Yeah, Pulse Man.
Yeah, and they made Android iOS games, so they've kind of dabbled in other platforms for a while, like well back into their history. I don't know. I don't really think it means a whole lot. I mean, I think they're certainly, from a business standpoint, just realizing that they would probably rather release something on Wii U, but they just realize that the sales aren't there at this point in time. And, you know, maybe this was just a game that they wanted to make and they just decided, well, you know, we're not going to put it on Wii U, but, you know, we can turn it around fairly quickly on these other platforms and also, you know, probably design it. I mean, it was probably done as, you know, as a PC game and then just ported over to PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I assume there's just a simple economics of it as well in terms of, well, we think we could sell this much of it, you know, so how much are we willing to spend on making it? And, you know, if this is the calculation that a lot of developers are making, as well, we don't expect it to sell that much on Wii U, Is it worth the going to the trouble of you know, the extra cost that it would take to develop it, when, as you said, it's probably, you know, more easy to kind of port it over to some of these other systems, and obviously more profitable.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's probably just nuts and bolts. I know it can look like kind of a slap in the face of an omission, but I think the reasons behind it are probably a lot more prosaic than that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The answer they've given is, you know, when they initially started building the game, they were building it with the idea of Steam, PS4, and Xbox, and then they said, you know, that was really all they could support at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, Sega is the publisher of this game, I believe. And
yep.
I think Atlas is doing PR for it, because that whole monster has turned into just a completely inscrutable clusterfuck of stuff going on over there. But so, well, Sega had, to a certain degree, had the call here too.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that, yeah, there was both an economics thing in play, and there was this kind of just resources.
Well,
that,
I mean, Greg just said it. There's no Pokemon game this year. So
right.
They probably looked out. I mean, because this, you know, this stuff doesn't just pop out of thin air. They were probably looking out like a year or two ago and saying, hey, Nintendo doesn't have us signed for a game in 2015 for Pokemon, so we have people that are just – they're not just going to let people sit there and do nothing.
Right.
You know? So they just said, hey, well, let's churn out this other game. Maybe they had somebody that had wanted to make this game for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they've made other stuff like Dozer and stuff like that, so –
But in the case of Nintendo ownership, partnership, there's you know, there's subsidiaries, there's affiliated companies, which usually means Nintendo owns some share percentage, and then there's partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
Partnerships are, you know, companies they work with heavily.
Right.
So Atlas would be considered a Nintendo partner, because they have a very tight relationship.
Yeah.
Tosei,
oh,
Goodfield,
so,
Gretzo,
yeah.
Like Sora Limited, really, is not a Nintendo-owned company.
That's
Alpha
Sakurai's
Dream. I mean, these are companies who they have a relationship with, but not an ownership situation. Then
yeah.
you have things that are companies they have ownership, like Genius Sonority, Pokemon Company,
Monolith.
Monolith is actually a subsidiary at this point, because they own like 97%.
Yeah, that's pretty much wholly owned.
Yeah, but Intelligence and HAL, Nintendo has skin in the game, so I would imagine that's probably a long term marriage situation where they're not really going to go anywhere. And ultimately, I mean, Nintendo's last CEO was scraped off of HAL's. Out of HAL's president's share.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously Nintendo has a pretty bird's eye view of what's going on inside that company.
Mm-hmm.
That they felt comfortable enough bringing in that tiny company's president to run their company. And in fact,
mm-hmm.
they co-own, HAL and Nintendo co-own another company that handles the Kirby franchise, Warp Star. They have 50% ownership in each. So, I mean, there's definitely money entanglements there as well. So I would say, you know, those companies, you don't need to worry about them so much. Genius Sonority's not going to go work their magic on the Vita. But
yeah, I mean, Game Freak's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
why,
I mean,
would
Game
they?
Freak will be around for the next Pokemon game.
They have,
I remember,
like, the biggest
also,
Nintendo cash cow ever.
And Game Freak just made, a couple years ago, made Harmonite for Nintendo. Like, that was an exclusive 3DS game.
Yeah.
If Nintendo comes calling for Game Freak to make a game, Game Freak will find them the time to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
yep.
that is a relationship that means a lot to them.
Yep.
You know, beyond like the relationship between the companies, I do think it's kind of puzzling when a game like Tembo the Badass Elephant, like, it seems like such a good fit for a Nintendo platform. For it to skip Nintendo platforms, it's just it is puzzling in and of itself. Mm-hmm. I know that the Wii U has a very small install base compared to the other systems. But I do think that, you know, like, Nintendo owners maybe fit a certain profile, like, they would mm-hmm. be so, more inclined to purchase a game like that than perhaps like the typical Xbox One owner.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And you get, like, you know, indie games that show up on Wii U where it's similar sort of equation, isn't it? Where it's like, well, you know, obviously there's not that much of an install base on Wii U, but they think it'll be worthwhile because it meshes well with the Nintendo audience.
Right. And it's kind of the second time that, at least, that Sega skips the Wii U where it kind of doesn't make sense. Like, with the Castle of Illusion remake, you would have thought, well, yeah, sure, put a Mickey Mouse game on the Wii U, but then, like, it's the only platform that didn't get it.
I would guess that, I mean, just from a technical standpoint, it's quite possible the engine they built that game in does not work well on Wii U. and it works well on the other two. And it was just, we can do this easy, Wii U would be harder, let's go ahead and do these. Maybe we'll have somebody, we'll contract somebody to do a Wii U version at a later date.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I can have these guys that I already have under contract or already employed to do the Xbox One and PS4 ports.
I mean, you could kind of see a little bit of a disassembly of these issues with the Bloodstained Kickstarter. Yeah. You know, where it's like, okay, we've got to have a stretch goal for this much extra money to get Armature to do their version of this game on Wii U.
Like,
you know,
that's,
so
that's the whole problem. The Wii U is always a one-off. You have to either hire somebody or get new people in-house to do just the Wii version. You know, like, nothing carries over to the Wii version, or the Wii U version, I should say.
Right, mostly because various most popular engines out there usually are not usable in the Wii U. Right.
Or,
right?
Or not easily. Like, you can make some of these engines work, you just have to do a little bit of extra lifting.
Yeah, I mean, Unreal is not supported, right? But they had the guy that was hacking it together. Wasn't that Unreal?
Yeah, I mean, somebody's gotten Unreal 4 running on Wii U. It's
Is it Armature that are saying they're going to, like, release their way of getting it adapted or something?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because there is an Unreal 4 that runs on mobile phones.
Yep.
And the Wii U is certainly more powerful than a mobile phone. It's just that there isn't a officially, you know, Unreal engine for Wii U. Like, the other systems do have that.
And,
so,
I mean, and no one's going to make a game in that engine without actual support from Epic. You would be stupid
except
to do that.
Except for apparently Armature, who's just going to go nuts.
Well,
I would imagine
if that's their little pet project, then go crazy. But, like, no one else is going
to
try to, like, pick
apart
the code.
They did have to get money specifically to that end.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's the, you know, in a lot of cases where it's just going to be, you know, it's not a Kickstarter, it's not sort of any kind of democratic element to it or anything like that. It's just, you know, the people, the bean counters or whatever, saying, okay, is this worthwhile?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It isn't going to look that worthwhile a lot of the time. That's just the situation they find themselves in. I mean, you know, I would assume if Nintendo can gain a lot more traction with NX, then, you know, if Game Freak have more of these sorts of projects in the future, you'll see them on that in addition to other digital services.
So our desired amiibo, Ray, writes... with a giant hamburger in his hand.
Raymond Bryce.
I'm afraid Nintendo's NX will be underpowered, which means third parties will not bother to port their games to NX. Ever since GameCube, I've not been very happy with Nintendo's underpowered hardware that graphically cannot compete with Sony and Microsoft's consoles. The Blue Ocean approach worked for Wii, but I hope they return to the basics of designing a graphically powerful console that can handle third-party games and ports that aren't gimped. No gimmicks this time around. Just let the games innovate instead. Do you guys agree, or do you plan on buying another console to get your graphics fix? By the way, the subject of this email appropriately was having your cake and eating it too, or something along those lines.
Yeah,
just came up just a few minutes ago.
I mean, I really wish that they would kind of go this route, but I mean, for me, really, it's like we just talked about. I mean, I don't really care power wise; they can put it wherever they want, but just make the architecture such that stuff can just be easily ported to it. I mean, I don't care. I mean, the Xbox One, it's effectively a gaming PC that is a little bit less powerful than the PS4. But because it's the gaming PC guts, you can port a PS4 game to either one, or a PC game to either one with no problem. Nintendo just needs to do that, and they can do whatever the hell they want with the hardware, but just make the architecture of it such that you can just port PC games to it. That's it. That would solve a lot of their problems. With third parties, definitely. Really, I mean, it's not like Xbox One and PS4 are doing anything spectacular. They're just gaming PCs, so any PC game is just ported directly over to it. It's not, you know, it's like PS4 is killing Xbox One, but, you know, all those PC games are still ported to it because it's easy for publishers and, you know, third party devs to do so.
Personally, like, I don't really have any hardware wishes. Like, hardware doesn't really interest me usually. Like, if I had my way, I would probably keep playing new games on the same system that I own over and over again. I just upgrade because it gives me access to the newer games. But one thing that I do want them to go back to is the focus on getting in and out of games quickly. The Wii U is really a misstep, I think, with the long loading times and just the UI initially was just so bad. Like, you couldn't find anything. You had to go through several, like, you had the friends list, and then you had the Miiverse, and then you couldn't see someone's profile by checking the friends list. You had to go, like, there were so many hoops. There were so many weird decisions in that UI, and it's still not optimal. It got better, but it's still not great.
Yeah, I mean, you can see they're aware of that problem, mm-hmm. you know, sort of like the quick start functionality that they bothered to kind of put in updates and stuff. I mean, it's something that Nintendo has often been sort of keenly aware of and placed a higher priority on than other, you know, developers and publishers going back to, you know, GameCube, for instance, their first sort of foray into optical media. It seemed to really emphasize, like, let's try and keep the loaded times at a minimum, let's try and disguise them as elegantly as we can, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, you know. They've got a little bit sloppy with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's because even 3DS has got some games that have got some pretty juicy load times.
I mean, the fact that Xenoblade X has those big download patches just to make it load faster is hilarious to me.
Right, and it's not just that Nintendo has gotten that side of that. It's also that the competitors have got so much right this generation. Like, I haven't touched an Xbox One yet, but the PlayStation 4, like, Sony last generation with the PS3 had the clunkiest
UI. Oh, it was awful.
It was awful. It takes forever to turn on and then to get into a game. And then the PS4, it's just almost instantaneous. I don't know. Maybe it depends on the number of games you have.
Well, the thing is, I mean,
it loads up very fast.
I mean, even with PS4, I mean, I know you don't have a PS4, Guillaume, but what they added that fairly recently in the last
just
couple of
pausing
months.
Pausing the game.
Well, that's the thing. I found this when I was playing GTA 5 a few months back. One day, and this was, I probably applied an update at some point, and I didn't even realize it. I shut down my console and put it into rest mode. When I brought it out of rest mode, it went right back into GTA 5, and I'm like, what the hell just happened? Mm-hmm. I'm right back in the friggin' game. It was really weird. I've never seen that.
No, I remember hearing about that ages ago and thinking it was really cool, because, you know, when you get used to basically DS and 3DS, you know, it's, obviously it's more important with a portable system, but it's something I've wanted in other, you know, in consoles.
Absolutely.
And PS4 has done it, so hopefully, you know, that's something else that they'll look at. And I think that's probably, you know, Nintendo's priorities are always a little bit different from everybody else's, we know that. It'll probably have a way higher priority on having limited power consumption than the others, because they always get, you know, it's in Japan, sometimes these things are a real issue, so they're very careful about being energy efficient and stuff. You know, they'll have these priorities that nobody else has. But I think just usability is going to be a big focus. Scalability, I think, is going to be really big. Like I said, if you've got these sort of different devices on the NX sort of family of systems, as James rightly invoked the term, that you could just easily kind of scale it down a little bit or scale it up, and then hopefully within that it'll be possible for games from other systems to be similarly kind of scaled down if necessary to put it on there. But yeah, the raw power is not going to be the priority.
No,
And that's no disappointment to me whatsoever.
I mean, I wish it would be just for once. I mean, just, I don't really care. I don't need a graphical powerhouse. But I mean, for crying out loud, make it as powerful as a PS4. Why not? I mean, the PS4 is already a year old? More than a year old, maybe?
I think, though, if they're going to, now that they're kind of back in the position of, you know, it's going to be a sort of insurrectionist kind of position, isn't it? You know, they're going to be coming in at a time when, you know, these other platforms have established themselves already, and the Wii U has not given them a good footing to launch another console, all this kind of stuff. They need to be competitive on price. Competitive, and that just places some very real constraints about what can be in these various devices or single device, whatever the platform's going to be.
Well, and you have, so speaking, you know, after I made all that comments about the terribleness of navel gazing, Genyo Takeda, one of the two managing directors of Nintendo right now, and recent reports have started to be rumbling that he's the likely successor in the CEO position. I mean, this is the man who developed the Wii. This is the man who famously made the comment that the gaming sphere had turned into just this desire to build Ferraris and nobody was building cars that are, you know, more economical, more approachable. So, I mean, if you're looking for them to come out here with the most powerful system, it's not going to happen. That's not who he is. And honestly, that's not where Nintendo's strengths are, and that's not where they really have the money to throw around, probably.
Well, I think they need to spend their money in the right places. With the Wii U, they didn't spend their money in the right place because they spent all their money on the gamepad and nobody cared about it.
That's the big problem is that they were making consumers spend their money on the gamepad whether they wanted it or not. I mean, personally, I've really, really enjoyed a lot of the things that the gamepad's brought to the table, but you know, when you pack it in with every system and you force the price point up and it didn't launch well and all that kind of stuff, they've hamstrung themselves. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that is an important lesson that they're going to learn, is that you need to be competitive on price, and you need I think the platform will be kind of expandable with different peripherals or different devices that use the platform. But you need to get that base to be as accessible as possible, and I think that is going to involve modest but hopefully well-tuned tech. Inside.
Yeah. Well, and to the power control point, he has also famously made comments about the Wii being the most efficient system in lieu of the rising costs of energy bills.
And no one cares.
Oh yeah, they always brag about it.
And no one cares.
Driver's carbon emissions up.
Well,
that
makes me think of the one interview with one of the third parties. I think they were talking about the Wii, but the first thing that they said with the Wii, they said that they brought in the Wii, and they said they kind of went through all the hardware specs that were quite unimpressive. I mean, if you're comparing to like somebody that's making a game for a PC or even at that time Xbox 360 or whatever, but they said that they kept bragging about how its power was the power that was required was so low, and they were just like, okay, we were just pretty much ready to just walk out of the room and like be like, whatever, man, like we don't really care how much power it takes up. And the thing is, furthermore, with the power, I mean, that's something that you can release a later version of the console and improve on that anyways. So
it matters right now, John.
Yeah, Sony just did it, didn't they? The PS4 in Japan, there's a revision of it that is much more energy efficient.
Yeah.
These are the things that Nintendo care about.
Right.
So American consumers.
This man in particular, who may or may not be the next CEO of Nintendo. I mean, it would be interesting, though, if they pulled somebody who has been for a long time on the hardware side of the house to run the company.
Mm-hmm.
How you would feel about that, it depends on who you are, probably. But, I mean, he would also be a caretaker. He is, he's 66. So he wouldn't be there for the long haul. But, you don't expect the NX to be a world beater graphically.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
It's not going to be. That would be insane to think.
I mean, I would actually like it. I would like it to be more portable focused, because the portable arena is where you can get away with less graphics. Like, sure, if it had features like cool stuff that you could do portability wise, and that is completely cool. I don't mind trading off graphics for that kind of stuff at all.
No, and again, I mean, get to talk about their point of view. You look at Japan. Obviously, portables is where it's at. And what has been winning the portable race
Monster
for the past
Hunter.
Two generations is it? Well, yes, that's true. And they certainly sort of bribed their way into getting Monster Hunter on 3DS when it was looking a bit shaky. But the PSP and the Vita being quite a bit more sort of technically proficient than the DS and 3DS did not secure them a more favorable market position there. So again, that kind of, I think that will continue to inform priorities about how they work this platform.
It's all price though, right? Because the 3DS sales didn't take off until they lowered the price. So
yeah, the price cut definitely helped in that. The Vita, obviously, they have had price cuts, they have had revisions, but it's still not as cheap. And I think the one thing they just absolutely have to do is in terms of is get bang for your buck. I mean, if this is going to be a cheap console, fine, but don't drive it up with other stuff. Get as good a technical, a good tech specs as you can get out of the price point that you're going for, because it will make it more likely to be able to get other games, from other platforms if you do that.
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense. And we talked about this when we first saw the Wii U, I can't remember. I know Johnny and I were impressed, and I would imagine, John, you probably were too, at the tech of what they had accomplished. Like, the actual, just like, from a purely technical standpoint of, they have this thing that is streaming with no perceivable lag to another device.
Yeah, yeah. It's the lag issue, I think, is a real, really impressive part about the Wii U, because it's so important with the kinds of, you know, the very action sort of dominated genres that Nintendo tend to
come. But they must have spent a fortune on that research. Because it's nuts. Because, I mean, we have wireless video at work. I mean, it has lag. I mean, even when you're just trying to use a mouse pointer, the lag is perceivable and frustrating as hell.
Yeah.
I can't imagine playing, like, a Mario game on it.
Yep.
But you can. Like, to that extent, I'm like,
all
right.
Yeah, but again, it's all how they employ it, right? They didn't really employ it in a way that was really necessary.
No.
To the experience. So,
no, I get that. I'm just saying, like, that's where they put their research.
Yeah.
No, that's the kind of priority that they have, you know. And it hasn't necessarily, in this case, not necessarily been commercially fruitful. In the past, obviously, you know, what they did with Wii, you know, sometimes they have hit pay dirt with these sort of priorities that no one else pays attention to.
And they'll bring stuff back as well. Stuff that they did 10 years ago, they'll bring it back and kind of change it a little bit.
Kind of reheat an idea, they've definitely done
so. I don't think that the gamepad was like some sort of complete waste or something, because maybe they repackaged that in a way, maybe with NX, that all of a sudden it becomes a huge hit. Maybe it was before its time. Maybe it just wasn't executed correctly. But I think the concept is sound, but it's just the execution that failed.
Well, but I think the other part of it is just that, you know, like, you could make the example with 3DS as well, you know, the stereoscopic effect and all that, you know, you have it, that drove up the price initially. I mean, I think some of what they did with 3DS was discretionary, and so they just set it too high because, you know, they thought...
Well, I mean, coming out of that E3 where people are like, I would pay $300 for this.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
And then guess also, what? They didn't.
when you had the shortages with the Wii and all that kind of stuff, and people were paying over market value for it on eBay or whatever because it was short supply and all. It's kind of like what's happened with Amiibo, you know, like it's like, oh well, we should have charged more, you know. And I think they went high instead of low on 3DS, and then they had to cut it. But also, it's just the fact that, you know, they had those 3D screens built into it, and that jacked up the cost of making it and everything. And I just think one thing, especially with the NX, you might see is that at least maybe for an entry level device for the platform, it's kind of like, okay, we will go back to basics, as Ray says. You know, we will just design, not necessarily a graphically powerful console, as Ray says, but in fact something where, you know, the costs that are associated with the technology are about stuff that will show up in the games that you can make in the system, rather than show up in a stereoscopic effect, a tablet style controller that can do this wireless streaming stuff without lag. You know, those kinds of things are a bit, you know, are proven to be superfluous enough that, you know, they were kind of a millstone around the neck of the platform, where you're having to charge more than Nintendo wants to charge for something that not everybody really likes. You know, not everybody likes the 3D on the 3DS. I've practically played with 3D on the entire time. But there's many people who are not like me. There's people who can't even see it properly.
Yep.
You know? So, and there's plenty of people that when they play in a video game console, they just want to play that console with a, you know, typical dual analog controller, and that's it. You know, they don't want a crazy tablet controller with gyro in it, or do play it on the John or whatever else. So, that could be the benefit of having a platform that's got a lot of different devices, but, you know, one common foundation is that, yeah, you can make plenty of wacky devices and sell them to Nintendo enthusiasts or whatever and see what works, see what doesn't. But you don't want the entire platform to get weighed down and by something like that, and then gets off to a bad start, and then it, you know, is kind of doomed.
that's the thing. That's what I feel Nintendo has kind of done, is they've almost catered to their niche audience a bit too much. It's not in some ways, but in other ways, and it's just where it's like, okay, you realize that you should be making this product for a broad audience, and right.
I think part of it is because they feel like, you know, it's a little bit like when we talk about this spiel that they give about F-Zero games, like, why haven't you just made another F-Zero, right? And it's like, well, we need to come up with an idea that says, like, oh, this is
but you really
new.
Don't.
This is
that's
different.
The thing. That's the whole thing. They
yeah,
don't.
No, you don't, though. That's the thing. I mean, I think New Super Mario Brothers is probably the best sort of demonstration of the fact you don't. I mean, it's called New
it's
Super
like,
Mario.
It's
bloody
it's like just,
Super
that's
Mario
the thing.
Brothers.
It's like,
you just hadn't done it in 10 years, and then you gave it to people,
yeah,
and they
like,
loved it.
Stop overthinking it, you know?
But, I mean, a point I'm making is that the real thing that sells a new Nintendo platform to people is not the fact that, you know, oh, well, now it's got 3D or now it's got a gamepad or whatever. It's what Guillaume said earlier on. You keep getting to play Nintendo games. Mm-hmm. You get to play the next... It's their games that sell you
the
system.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean... Those the brilliance of those, the enjoyment of those, doesn't have to be tied to the platform's hardware. You know, I know that's been their kind of want for a while now. You know, and sometimes those sorts of limitations, those sort of directions in the whole, have spurred their creativity and resulted in some positive things. But I don't think it has to be that way. I think they should have a little bit more self-confidence that it is their software that will sell the system.
Yeah.
So just make the platform the best possible delivery system for that content.
Yeah, like you want to strike, because when Jonah was talking about bringing third parties in, like it's all well and good to make the system easy to code for, but also it's got to sell so that third parties have an incentive to put their games on the system.
Yeah,
and
that,
so
that's the real thing.
The reason why people will pick up this you know, piece of hardware that's mostly identical to the competitors, well, it's because the Nintendo has to make good games for it. They have to create a reason to get that platform, and that reason will be those games.
Yeah, and you know, it's and the games that have come out for Wii U, they have not been, I mean, there's nothing. There are very few. There are very few things
oh.
that.
Oh,
what was it?
Where are you going?
What?
Where are you going here?
Where am I going?
Well, they're not really like mind blowing.
Well, that's
right?
Well, what I'm
Mario
what I'm
Kart
saying
8
is
looks like Mario
well,
Kart.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. I mean, what about you know, Mario Kart 8 could not have been done on PS4. Virtually nothing.
Hmm. Also, Mario Kart 8 came out last year, so you know. Like the first year of the Wii U was just barren and not all that exciting. Like I was excited to play New Super Mario Bros. U, but you know, most people weren't.
Yeah.
So they got to come up with games that are just more enticing than that, that are just more fresh and more appealing to the majority of people.
But I also think, you know, that a lot of the Wii U games, they would probably be more appealing. You know, they are plenty appealing in themselves as games, but it's a lot more difficult to sort of complete that sale when it's like, well, the 3DS exists, mm-hmm. and you've got Mario Kart 7
right.
on that, and then, all right, Mario Kart 8, and you've got New Super Mario Bros. 2, New Super Mario Bros. U. Smash 3DS, Smash Wii U. You know, it's difficult to make the point that it's like, well, this is just so much better on
that
Wii U.
Shit we sold you last year was garbage.
Obviously, you know, if you're enthusiasts like I am, like we are, you know, you want it all, right?
Yeah.
That's fine. But as we've seen, that tent pole ain't big enough to really, you know, make the kind of impact in the market you want. You got to reach beyond that. And so the best way you could do it is not have these stupid fucking barriers between platforms that give you this problem of like, oh, well, you know, I'm just happy with what I've got. So, you know, all this work that Nintendo's developers have been doing on really good games like Mario Kart 8, and Mario Kart 8 has sold
mm-hmm,
quite
yes.
well, but you could argue in some ways it's gone to waste. Because it's gone on a platform where it's not selling nearly up to its potential.
Yeah.
So I think that's the you know, these barriers that they've created for themselves. I know they're a hardware maker. I know they were, you know, they've typically sold them at a profit, although that kind of went away in this cycle. But it, you know, don't hamstring yourself at least. You know, that at least give your games, which is really what is so special about Nintendo, the best possible opportunity to shine and to get into people's homes.
And so ends our Thunder Round.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the Thunder Round. It wasn't a Nintendo
it
World
sure wasn't.
Nintendo World Report presents Radio Free Nintendo production of the Lords of Thunder Round, TMTMTM. I just need to get a recording of that because it's really hard to say.
It just paste it in stock every time.
Yeah, it's just with no inflection.
Say it once with just absolutely perfect eloquence.
But just no inflection whatsoever. So it's equally, completely inapplicable in every use and equally applicable in every use. It's perfect and yet terrible. All right. Speaking of, that's a good way to end the show. Not perfect yet terrible. Not what I was going for. But that's going to end the show this week. First, we want to go ahead and remind everybody that if you have an email you want to send to us, you can send it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Additionally, we have a retroactive going on. John, what are we retroactiving?
Blaster Master by Sunsoft. Great game. Play it.
Ah, pop quiz hotshot. You actually got it.
Nice. I actually love that game, so I'm like, yes, Blaster Master.
No, it's...
Can't always get me, Greg. Stuff. Can't always get me, but mostly I'd be like...
What is Streets of Rage 2? We have a thread for our retroactive junior for Blaster Master. Traffic has been very light in that thread so far, so we're actually going to say we're going to do it in 2 weeks. I know I said we were going to consider doing it next week, but I want to give...
Well, I already bought the game, so please wait for me.
Yes, I want to give people a little bit more time to play it.
Deadline spur action, James.
Well, the deadline isn't...
If you keep moving it back, no one will ever get off their ass and comment.
I will make sure that in 2 weeks, even if we have no comments on Blaster Master, we will fucking talk about Blaster Master.
Yeah, I can talk about Blaster Master at length.
I will blaster... Oh, I... okay. I will...
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
I just broke something in my dramatic hand gestures. I just broke a coat hanger. All right. So, Blaster Master, in 2 weeks, Retroactive Junior, get on it. I want to thank Greg for being here.
My pleasure, James. Good to be with you.
I want
to
thank you two for being here as well.
I wouldn't say it's my pleasure, but I show up every week, so it's more of a habit.
Great. Awesome. I want to thank you, Home, for being here.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
And, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Like this. Or watch Pokemon be really bad at trivia about other Pokemon. I've got a game for you, and it came out on the GameCube in 2003. And on that thing... Actually, no, wait, we got to go around one more time, because, Greg, you...
Do you want to?
I've only got a handful of emails.
I mean, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm ready to just put my my headset down and just walk away from this podcast.
I think we might want to do... what do you want to do, Greg?